Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I am bat-tastic today, Adam. We are 17 days away from the Bat-Cat wedding. I am so excited. I mean, less than 3 weeks. We've got one issue left of Batman before the wedding. I'm eating up all these Bat-Cat variant covers, these beautiful covers. Like, there's been so many of them that have dropped, and I'm just eating all those up. I'm loving the prelude of the wedding issues, just getting me as if I couldn't already be enough hype for the wedding. Like, these are just getting me even more hype. I'm just in bat euphoria right now. So close to the wedding, dude. How about you?
I'm good. It's by the way, as we're recording this, it's also Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to any listeners who are fathers or who maybe mothers that are pulling double duty. So happy Father's Day
absolutely
to the listeners that it pertains to. But I'm doing well. It's been a good week. I've done quite a bit of comic reading this week, and I actually have a recommendation. Comic-wise.
Alrighty. I've got some too, so you go first, and then I'll chip in and give mine.
Yeah, my recommendation is a comic that just launched this past Wednesday, or as of we're recording, this past Wednesday.
Can I guess?
Hold on. No, you can't guess. You're going to ruin my thunder. which was the 13th of June, and it's Hawkman number one.
I was gonna guess wrong. I had guessed, I would
have. I should have let you guess then, because you would have been wrong. But
gonna guess Plastic Man, because that just launched too.
Yeah, that's not it. Although I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I would. That, you know, the Plastic Man thing. But Hawkman number one is written by Robert Venditti and with art by Brian Hitch, and it is a fantastic start.
I think it was Jim Lee was on DC All Access this past week. He was talking about it, and he was saying some cool stuff about it, like about what Venditti and Hitch were doing. And I'll say something. Say what you want about Hitch's writing. His art is amazing.
Yeah, I love his writing. His art is phenomenal. And listen, and you're right. Say what you want about his writing, but his Justice League arc, I think it was the tail end of the new.
Legacy. That arc is phenomenal.
It was Rebirth, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. It was his final arc in Rebirth.
Right. Well, his Justice League run, however long it was 10 times better than that priest garbage that we had to sit through.
Well, now we've got Snyder on the book, and I don't know if you read issue number one yet, but it was awesome, I thought.
I did, but let me talk about Hawkman, because I want
to... Okay, yes, yes, sorry.
Yeah, so, I mean, the story, the art is phenomenal, the story is great, and what Robert Venditti has done is he's managed to take the various different origins of Hawkman, whether it be, the reincarnation angle, the alien, Thanagarian angle. And he's taken that and he's rolled it all into one, and it all counts. And he further explores the reincarnation aspect of the character, which is interesting. It also brings in, the fact that, as we know, Carter Hall's an archaeologist, so it brings that in, and basically he's trying to put pieces together about his own origins, because even he knows that there's some stuff about himself, past lives that he's lived, that he doesn't fully remember. So he's tracking down this artifact that will help him find more about himself. So the archaeology pertains to, instead of studying somebody else's history, he's studying his own, which I think is a fascinating angle. And there's a two-page spread in the book where basically it shows all of his pasts, even the stuff that he doesn't know about. And there's a version of him on Krypton. And to me, that was fascinating because I'm like, wow, it pertains to tonight's conversation, because remember there were those rumblings that Hawkman and Hawkgirl could eventually appear on Krypton?
Yes, yes.
Well, now, based on this comic, David Goyer and his team have a way in to approach that. So I thought that was fascinating. So I'm really looking forward to it. Look, this book was so good that not only did I purchase it on Comixology, you know, the day it came out, I instantly subscribed to the rest of the comic. So so I'm really looking forward to it.
I was listening to Bat Force Radio on their recent episode talking about this week's comics. They were praising it too, yeah. And they brought up that thing very briefly. That they said there was like a Kryptonian Hawkman, yeah. And I was like, what are that interesting? What are they talking about? But now you've elaborated. I'm like, oh man, they were serious, like an actual Kryptonian Hawkman. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's the perfect issue number one. It's like in the sense of laying the groundwork for what's to come and basically quote unquote setting the table for what, you know, for going forward. It's perfect. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That is really cool.
So all of our listeners, if you're looking for a book to read and it's, you want something other than Batman or Superman to add to your DC repertoire, make it Hawkman number one.
Cool. Well, I have a couple of recommendations. In terms of a current comic book that I just read this past week, would be Batgirl versus the Riddler, which is the third part in the Batman Prelude to the Wedding series, which I'm just loving. Like I was saying, this Prelude to the Wedding, like I said, it's just such a great setup for the wedding and getting these awesome battles between different members of the Bat family and the final one, not really a Bat family member, but Harley Quinn versus the Joker. But all three of them so far I thought were phenomenal. And yeah, the most recent one, Batgirl versus Riddler, awesome stuff there. In terms of some old comics that I've been checking out, not really in this first case, I'm going to say it's not really an old comic, but not something that just got released, but you know, a few years old.
Sure.
I just read for the first time both volumes of Teen Titans Earth One, which I just loved. I thought it was so cool, first of all, just seeing, like with all the Earth One books, especially my favorites are the Batman ones, but all the Earth One books, the way they keep you on your toes, like because they put so many twists on mythology, it's so cool, but the way they also respect and pay homage to like the traditional mythology, so cool. I love what they did with Teen Titans. It's such a unique take. It's really awesome. So I read both volumes of that this week, loved it. And then here's a curveball for everybody. There is a comic that I was reading this week called Batman Shadow of Sinzu. Now, if you're familiar with the video game Batman Rise of Sinzu, which in my opinion is an extremely underrated Batman video game, I used to play it with my roommate in college, and we just used to have a blast with that game. It was just, it's such a fun game.
Yeah, it
was. I love that game. But anyway, very weirdly, there was a digital comic that was released around the time of Rise of Sinzu coming out that, unlike Rise of Sinzu, which is set in the DCAU, this video game is set in its own this comic is set in its own continuity, but it was intended to be nonetheless a promotional tie-in to Rise of Sinzu, and it's called Batman Shadow of Sinzu, like I said. It's available for free on DCKids.com, and it's 22 issues. They're each five pages, so it's only about like 100 or so pages total, but it's so good. There's some amazing Batcat stuff in there, including a version of Catwoman's first time visiting the Batcave. There's a scene in this comic that reminded me of the Batman Animated Series episode Almost Got Him, where we hear different villains tell these stories of when they almost beat Batman, which was really cool. And then they do some amazing stuff. They do an amazing telling of the Wayne murder in it, and some amazing stuff with Sinzu at the end. So very obscure comic I'm recommending, but check it out. It's free. So, I mean, you're not even having to pay for it. It's free and it's awesome.
Yeah. So, at that point you got nothing to lose. So,
right. Right.
And the best part is Jordan recommended it. So if it sucks, you can blame him. That's my philosophy.
Well, you can't blame me too much because it was free. But I'm telling you right now, it does not suck. It is awesome.
I'm giving our listeners the option that if you know, it's their loophole. If they don't like it, they can always blame you. Like, I wasted 5 minutes of my time here. But, yeah.
It is awesome.
Oh, good. So there you go. There's your reading recommendations on this portion of the podcast.
Yes. We said we were going to start making this a regular thing, and I think we missed a couple weeks, but I think it's awesome that we're doing this now, and I think it's a lot of fun. So
yeah, we got to get, you know what it is, I think we just got to get in the groove of doing it whenever we read to sort of pick our, if you will, I guess, pick of the week or whatever, and then and recommend it.
Well, this past week was not a Tom King Batman week, but we all know that if it is a Tom King Batman week, it's pretty sure that that's going to be my pick of the week.
it's not hard to telegraph Jordan's conversations or recommendations.
Very true, very true.
But let's move on to the news.
Yes, we shall.
All right.
So we have a ton of news this week. It was a pretty awesome news week this week, was it not, Adam?
It was great. It was good.
Yes, yes, indeed. It was almost Comic Con level how much news we were getting this week.
I have actually some theories on that, which I'll get to in my portion of the
proceedings. I am eager to hear them.
I have a lot of theories this week. A lot of theories and speculation on my end. I've been theorizing this week. What do we got first? What's first up?
First up, we've got you know how we usually split it up into film, TV, and comics. This week, and I think we've done this once or twice before, but we're going to start out with just some general news because it's news items that sort of pertain to multiple mediums of DC entertainment, I should say. First off, we have news that Geoff Johns is sort of shifting roles at DC. So he's been previously the president and chief creative officer. First, he was just the chief creative officer, and then I think a few years ago it was that he became president as well.
Yeah.
But now he's sort of shifting roles, and he's going to be more involved in just doing creative stuff. So he's signed like an exclusive deal with WB to be a writer and producer. He's going to be working on Green Lantern Corps as a writer and producer. And of course, he's working with a lot of the TV stuff. We know he's doing comic book work with Doomsday Clock. He's going to be writing the Three Jokers story that was teased in the DC Rebirth one-shot. He's starting up a production company called Mad Ghost. And so anyway, what this all amounts to is that he's going to be less involved in sort of having to deal with more of the logistical stuff at DC and more involved with telling Bat-tastic stories. And hopefully that means he has more time to finish Batman Earth 1.
Well, actually,
speaking of Earth 1, I can't wait for Volume 3, especially because Catwoman was teased in Volume 2, and I've just been waiting so long for Volume 3. So hopefully that's one thing on his plate.
It's actually lit, because you're right, he set up his own producing company, Mad Ghost Productions, right? And
Yes.
And on their website, one of the things it has listed in the comic section is Batman Earth 1 Volume 3. So you're going to get your wish.
Well, hopefully so. I'm very excited about that. I think this is awesome news because, listen, I love Geoff Johns as a writer. And so if this gives him more time to do what he does best, which is write, I mean, I haven't had any problems with anything he's, I mean, I don't know specifically exactly what he's been doing as, you know, in a role more as a logistical leader, as a president and chief creative officer. But in terms of his writing, I've loved almost everything the guy's ever done. So if he has more time to do that, and again, Earth One, that's my top priority for him, to be honest, because I need Volume 3. I've been waiting 3 years now since Volume 2 came out. I need Volume 3. But anyway, I'm so excited. Here's to some awesome work from Geoff Johns in the future.
Yeah, here's my take on it. I think this is a great move because I don't think Geoff Johns, to me, like you said, he's one of the best writers in comic books.
Yes.
And he obviously has experience in film, not just being the executive or the chief creative officer, whatever the title was, but also, he worked at, he got his start in Hollywood with Richard Donner, right?
Indeed.
And I think it was the Lethal Weapon films. So he's got experience on that front. But at the end, you know, Geoff Johns is main strength is at the creative level. So again, I don't know what went on in his executive position, but I can imagine for somebody of that creative talent, an executive level position where you have to deal with bureaucratic, you know, policies and corporate structures, that is stifling for a person like him. So I think this move is better. It's better suited for him. Obviously, he's a creative force on the Titans show for the DC Universe streaming service.
And Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol as well. And, you know, he's credited for his work on the Flash TV show. But in terms of the Green Lantern Corps announcement, that to me is just pure common sense and genius because Geoff Johns, his work starting with Green Lantern Rebirth, not the current Rebirth brand.
Right. When he brought back Hal.
Green. Yeah, exactly. It was, I think, 2004, 2005. It was my first ever, well, second Green Lantern book, but first ever, monthly subscription to Green Lantern. And, you know, he had a good 5 to 8 year run on Green Lantern. And everything he wrote pertaining to the Green Lantern, in my opinion, was absolute gold. Whether it's,
I agree.
Whether it's Rebirth, whether it's Secret Origin, whether it's the Sinestro Corps War, whether it's, you know, the Blackest Night, you know, his initial, I think it was 20 some odd issues of Rebirth, Green Lantern's Rebirth. So it makes absolute sense that the man who basically defined or redefined what the Green Lantern is in comic books would be handling the film. And so, you know, the writing aspect, but also the executive producer aspect, I think is very important. But, you know, a lot of people will look at this news and say, yeah, but he was involved in the 2011 Green Lantern movie. Yeah, you know why? You know on what level he was involved? Can I tell you what level he was involved? Warner Brothers, the regime back then, they put his name on the official press releases to appease fanboys. That's why they put.
But that movie was awesome.
But I'm not that. That's not an indictment of the quality of the film because I enjoyed the film myself. I'm one of the few, apparently, along with you and about 12 other people. But if you don't like the 2011 Green Lantern, to say, well, he was on it, you know, yeah, but that was an in-name only sort of position. And so, you know, being the writer and executive producer, I think now, you know, he'll be...
Just producer, not executive producer.
Okay, producer. He'll be, you know, a real driving force in every sense of the word on that film.
Which actually, I say just producer. I think producers actually typically... has more power.
Yeah, usually the executive is, they put it on there. It's more of a monetary sort of title than anything else. So, hence John Peters on Man of Steel. because God, thank God, he had nothing to do with that movie. So I'm over the moon about this. The first thing I said was, okay, can we get a move on this Green Lantern Corps thing now? Now I'm really excited. All right, here's who I want cast. I'm starting mapping out the whole thing. And look, if he brings even a fraction of, you know, a piece of his comic book storylines into the
film, oh, yeah.
And if he plans it out as some sort of, if he, you know, has, you know, on a notebook somewhere, plans beyond one movie, I think, oh man, it's good. Look, Green Lantern, when done well, when done properly, is essentially Superman meets Star Wars. And to me, when I think of Geoff Johns' work on the title, that's what I think of. And so, if you know, with Geoff Johns, that, you know, as a driving force, I think we're in for something special. And I'm glad he's now put in a position, when he's involved in the movies, that he's going to have a say. More of a say than just, is this okay? Is this what, you know, like, more than just a casual, hey, check and make sure we're not doing anything too crazy, but we're not going to take any other suggestions. Just look this, give this a once-over, you know? So I'm glad he's going to have more power, for sure.
And, hey, well, we saw what a great job he did with the writing credit on Wonder Woman.
And it's also worth noting that he's getting a co-writing credit on both Wonder Woman 1984 and Aquaman. So his I don't want to say footprint because he writes with his hands. at least that I'm aware of. Maybe he's so talented that he can write with his feet too. I don't know. He has his handprint all over the DC films slate. That's at least the forthcoming.
He makes a construct and he writes with the Green Lantern construct.
That would be impressive. See, I'd pay to watch that. And also, it's worth noting that that the Shazam movie, it's been revealed in one of the articles that it's going to be partially based on the backup story that he wrote in. Remember when he was doing Justice League?
Yeah, New 52. Yeah.
Yeah, they had the backup with the Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be based on that, or at least
partially. Well, I think that's what I've sort of thought was probably going to be the case for a while, because like a lot of the casting has been characters from run. So.
Yeah.
His
role may have changed, but Geoff Johns ain't going nowhere, and I couldn't be happier about that.
Not only is he not going nowhere, but it looks like he's gonna have more time to give us all this amazing content that we love.
And Batman Earth 3, yes please.
Earth 1, Volume 3.
Earth 1, whatever. Earth 1, 2, 3, 54, I don't give a shit, whatever it is.
It's pretty important. It's Earth 1.
If it's by Geoff Johns and it has Batman in it, I'll read it. But also the three Jokers, you know, when I read that part of the rebirth one shot,
mm-hmm.
I was like, I need to know what this means. You know, I literally sat there staring at the page because I was so like shocked for about five minutes. and I'm still waiting. So Geoff Johns, enjoy whatever Father's Day. I don't know if he has kids or enjoy Father's Day with your father or your father-in-law, whoever it is, and then after that, just put yourself in a room, have some beverages, some whatever you're going to eat, and just type away, and the world will be a better place for it. I'm on board. Sign me up for all this shit, and my money is going out the window because I'm going to buy everything he writes, and that's all.
Cool. Well, I'm totally with you, man.
Cool. What's next?
All right. Next up, some more sort of news that pertains to multiple mediums of DC entertainment, which is that the Teen Choice Award nominees have been announced, and DC is heavily represented.
Well, there's 12,000 shows, so we might as well be.
Well, and in the movies. That's why I say
it's good.
You got movie and TV nominations. Okay. Right. So, yes, this... hopefully maybe you've already been voting. I've already been voting for a few days now because the voting's been open for a few days. But yeah. If you haven't, get on that, because here's everybody who's nominated.
Yeah.
First off, for Choice Action Movie, Justice League is nominated. Uh-huh. For Choice Action Movie Actor, Henry Cavill is nominated for Justice League, of course.
I'll vote for him because in spite of the mustache, I'm glad Superman's back.
Even the mustache, I honestly only notice in one scene.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, in spite of all that drama and that hoopla, you know, just seeing him as Superman and in that way was cool.
He was amazing. I've been voting for Justice League, and I've been voting for Henry Cavill.
Now, can you vote more than once? Is that kind of
you can? Yes, right. You can vote on. First of all, you can vote on Twitter.
Can I sabotage other votes? Because I don't want, you know.
Secondly, you can vote on Twitter.
Well,
once
I can vote on Twitter. You can't vote on Twitter because you're bugged out of there.
Hey, they said they Twitter sent out a notice to everybody who's had the same issue I have, and they said that they're hoping to resolve it this week. So hopefully,
okay, folks, fun's over. Jordan's coming back on Twitter.
So hopefully, I was very nervous for a little bit because things were not looking good, but now it looks like they are going to fix things, and that I should be back. Hopefully. This week. So crossing my fingers, maybe it'll even be by the time this episode drops.
Right.
But yes, you can vote on Twitter once per day. You can vote on, and then I can start voting for the Teen Choice Awards on Twitter, because I've been having to vote through the website, which you can also do. I was going to do that anyway. I was going to vote both ways, because then more votes. You can vote for each category 10 times per day on the website.
Oh.
So, yes, so I have been voting for Just League. I have been voting for Henry Cavill. Then we've got Choice Action Movie Actors. This is the first time, as DC fans, we have to choose one or the other. And you, because both Amy Adams and Gal Gadot are both nominated for Choice Action Movie Actress for Justice League.
Yeah,
so I've been voting for Gal because she had I think they were both phenomenal in Justice League, but she had a bigger role. So I figured I would vote for Gal.
Look, there's no doubt who's my vote. It's going to Gal because I love Amy Adams as Lois Lane. I think, you know, she's really good. But Wonder Woman Gal Gadot is just I have to.
For me, it just comes down to Gal had such so much bigger role.
If you're saying Choice Action Star, right? If you're, is that the category?
Well, it's not that she's an action star. It's somebody in an action movie, though. Okay. So it's. So yeah,
but either way, her role was far more substantial than.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Exactly my point. I wish I could vote for both of them, but you know, I wish they could both win, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Got to pick one. Then here is another one where you have to choose as a DC fan. We've got Choice Action TV Show, and Arrow, Gotham, Supergirl, and The Flash are all nominated in this category.
Oh, that's so tough.
Now, personally, I've been voting for Gotham because that's my favorite, but. Yeah, awesome to see so much DC.
All right, you know what? I'll make it fair. If you're voting for Gotham, I'll vote for Arrow.
Okay.
We'll spread the wealth and then.
Vote for Gotham. You should still vote for Gotham.
Yeah, but then poor Arrow's not going to get any love. You're giving all the love to Gotham.
My point is, I think Gotham's better. I love Arrow too, but I think Gotham's better.
All right.
Do you disagree?
Well, I can't remember what I said on the podcast, but whatever folks, go back and listen. Which one did I say was better? Did I say which one was better? I can't remember.
You gave Gotham season 4. Well, you didn't. Just in terms of this most past season, you gave Gotham a higher grade.
Okay, in that case, I have to vote for it. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. If I'm being consistent, yeah. All right.
There we go. Convinced you to give your vote for Gotham, so I am happy now.
Folks, the Russians tampered with my vote. That's all I'm going to say.
No, just bad Jordan. It was just me. Then we've got Choice Action TV Actor. Again, got to choose. I'll tell you who I'm voting for, but we've got several DC actors here. Chris Wood from Supergirl. Of course, Mon-El.
Yeah.
David Mazouz, Bruce Wayne on Gotham.
Sure.
Grant Gustin, Barry on The Flash. And then Stephen Amell, Ollie on Arrow. So I've been voting for David, of course, but awesome again to see so many DC actors.
On this one, I'm voting for Stephen.
Come on, dude. David was so good.
He was good, but I'm voting for Steven on this one.
Come on, dude.
I've met Steven. He's such a great guy, and we talked about hockey. So My mind is made up on that one. So.
But Daveed is one of the best live action Bruce Waynes ever, dude. You gotta give it to Daveed.
I understand your love for him, but I'm sticking with my guns on this one.
All right. This next one, I know who you're not voting for. Actually, I think I know who you're probably going to vote for as well. But we'll see if
you,
I'm right.
I can tell you who I'm not voting. If Iris West is in the category, it ain't going to happen.
Choice action TV actress. We've we've got Katie Lotz from Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Candace Patton from The Flash.
Yep.
Daniel Panabaker from The Flash also.
Ooh, these are good choices.
Emily Bette Ricards from Arrow.
Definitely
and, and Melissa Benoist from Supergirl.
Oh, this is so tough.
I've been voting for Melissa Benoist.
Alright.
Personally.
Well, I love me some Melissa, but, you know, I've always said on the show that, you know, I said recently on our Flash episode that didn't I say, I remember vividly saying that Katie Lotz is my favorite actress on the DC TV shows. Mm-hmm. So going by that logic, I have to vote for Katie.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. See, so you knew who I was and wasn't going to vote for.
Yep, I did indeed. That one you were predictable.
You've been paying attention. if you didn't know that, it would have been pretty sad. Here we are, 40 some odd episodes. You still didn't figure it out, but you know, yeah. So there we go. That's pretty good.
Alrighty. Well, now we're going to move into our film news. I guess I should just wrap that up by saying, yes, go out and vote for DC. Hopefully sure. You're voting in the categories of multiple DC. Hopefully you're voting for Gotham and Daveed. But other than that, just, yeah, go vote for DC, and hopefully they can take home some awards at the Teen Choice Awards this year. That'd be awesome.
And if the Russians are listening, tamper with the Marvel votes. It's okay. you ruined one election. Why not one more? But okay, so film news.
Film news, yes. Yeah. So I'm going to let you take the lead on this one because I know you were saying you had a lot to say about this one and a lot of theories with regards to this. So we got this big article from The Hollywood Reporter. So why don't you take the about DC films? So take it away, Adam.
Basically, Boris Kitt wrote the article. And in it, he's talking about how Warner Brothers and DC has changed their course with the new leadership in place, namely Walter Hamada taking charge. And so one of the things they basically mentioned that they spent quite a considerable amount of time in the early part of the article talking about the two different Joker movies that are in development. And so what they said was, you know, they mentioned the Jared Leto, I was going to say Heath Ledger, but sadly we can't get that movie, but the Jared Leto Joker movie being in development. And they also mentioned the Todd Phillips, you know, Martin Scorsese produced Joker film. And I'm going to have to eat some crow on this one because I think was it last week that I said, you know, in my opinion, I'd be surprised if that movie happens.
Was it and right? I fought you on that, and look who looks like they're coming out on top here.
Well, no, but I'll admit when I'm wrong. when you know, it's not subjective like an opinion, but this seems to be like a fact. So what they're saying is that Warner Brothers wants to. Is planning on starting production on the Todd Phillips directed Joker film in the fall, this fall. The way the article worded, because they mentioned Joaquin Phoenix, and they don't mince words when they say Joaquin Phoenix is set to star as the Joker. So to me, the way I'm reading now, again, we haven't gotten official confirmation from Warner Brothers themselves. But the way I read that is that, man, because remember, the last time we heard that he was in negotiations were about to start. Remember, we reported on the fact that he had made a verbal agreement with Todd Phillips And that, yeah. Now Warner Brothers was going to go in and start negotiating. Well, based on the wording of that quotation, I guess the negotiations went well.
It's interesting you point that out, Adam, because that's actually something I noticed. The article that announced the Jared Leto Joker film recently, they worded it similarly, like it was a done deal. It does seem like that's the case.
Yeah. So, and the interesting thing about that piece of news was they also mentioned that it was going to be a $55 million budgeted film. And I know it's just a budget, but I like this piece of news.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. Because I've often said whether it's Joaquin Phoenix or whether it's I just talked about him.
Jared Leto?
No. Yeah, Jared Leto, that's it. I think spending anywhere of $100 million or upwards on a Joker film is asinine and ridiculous. What I like about the $55 million budget is that, you know, if everything works out in a decent manner, if you get good, decent reviews and a good, you know, good word of mouth, then chances are you have a good chance of making that back within your first weekend, right?
You know what I call this, Adam?
What's that?
The Hamada impact.
Oh, definitely. I agree with you. Yeah.
Or rather the New Line impact, maybe even you could call it.
Yeah.
You know, him coming over from New Line, and this is something that I said when he was first brought over, which was that I didn't know that much about the guy, but the thing that excited me most was his experience with turning out huge profits from films with very low budgets. And
yeah, we discussed this. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And it looks like that is exactly the case.
So, and I think, again, I think, look, it's, I've been, we've been, you and I have been down for this from the start. This idea of a 1980s set, Martin Scorsese style, Joker origin film. We've been.
Oh yeah.
We've been good with it for a large portion. And the other thing that I want to point out is I read on Omega Underground, I think is the website, the website's name. They're saying that specifically what they've heard is that yes, it is in the fall, specifically September, is when they want to start shooting in New York. And so they elaborated on that part of the article. The other part, when they mentioned
that's perfect for Gotham City. I mean, Gotham, the TV show, shoots in New York, and look how amazing that looks.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely.
And so, you know, the other thing the Hollywood Reporter mentioned in regards to the when they brought up the Joker stuff is that DC is sort of, you know, mulling over names for their imprint.
DC Dark and DC Black.
Yeah, I don't mind either name, personally. My heart was set on Elseworlds, but if they're not going to be super smart and go with that, that's fine. They should have listened to me, but whatever.
I feel the same way. I'm cool with these, but Elseworlds would have been the best choice.
And now, I'm cool with either name, but I think they should go with DC Black, only because...
I'm with you.
It ties in with that label.
I was thinking the same thing. It creates synergy with DC Black Label, which, and so that's like, and they're very similar concepts. They're both places, one on film, but one in the comics, where it's where creators can tell out of continuity stories. Right, so you can have some synergy there.
Right, yeah. So I'd go with that one.
Yeah, me too.
Just for that fact. Now, if they go with the other one, well, I'm fine with that too. But,
I wouldn't take huge issue with the other one, but to me, the only issue with the other one is it makes it seem like this line is specifically like for dark DC films rather than simply films that are out of continuity. Like those are two very different things. Like yes, this first one, the Joaquin Phoenix one, is probably going to be a very dark film, but I don't know if that's. It doesn't seem to me like that's the main theme of this banner. It seems like the main theme of this banner is simply that they're out of continuity.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
And to me, DC Black, though, I think would be awesome for the name. And, like, and, DC Dark, it would be fine, but DC Black, out of these two, that would be the way to go, in my opinion.
And there's no confirmation one way or another, but if the Joaquin Phoenix Joker film was R-rated, I'd be down with it.
Oh, I can't imagine it won't be, to be honest.
But
I'd be shocked if it were, like, I'd be shocked if it were not.
So based on this article, at least this portion of the article, it looks like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie is going to happen, and it's a lot closer to happening than we previously thought.
Than you previously thought.
No. Well, I said no, but we both know Warner Bros. History, where they do that competing projects thing, and then one takes the forefront. But in this case, in this case, they said screw it, we're doing both, or we're still, or at the very least, they said we're still doing the other one while we develop this Jared Leto thing. And it makes sense when you consider the budget. It makes a lot of sense because worst case scenario, if this thing turns out to be a turd, it's not like they're losing, you know, $200 million, $300 million, right? So yeah. It's a lot easier to swallow when it's a $55 million expense. And this is me assuming, playing studio executive, because I've never spent any money in the vicinity of $55 million on anything. But also in this article, they talked about The Flash, and how The Flash is going to start filming in, the plan is in 2019. And basically what they've reaffirmed, that the two directors who did Game Night and who wrote Spider-Man Homecoming are writing and directing. And they said that tonally, The Flash was going to take some of its cues from Back to the Future, which I'm A-okay with. I think that's great, especially when you factor in Ezra Miller and the type of Flash he played in Justice League, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You remember when Robert Zemeckis was
right,
sort of
and we
were all like, oh man, if that's like so perfect, because like they could, I mean, the time travel stuff with the Flash would be so similar to Back to the Future. And now it looks like, even though Zemeckis isn't on board, it looks like we could still get some of that, which is just so cool.
Well, put it this way, right? Like, if you look at Spider-Man Homecoming, mm-hmm. it was very much like a John Hughes film, right? And that was written by... So we've seen how the director team can take influences from other movies to get it to establish a tone. So the fact that they're going to go Back to the Future tone with Flash makes a lot of sense. And it does lend credence to those rumors about, at one point, Robert Zemeckis being interested.
What would be really cool that I just thought about?
Yeah.
What if, it would totally make sense with what we know about Barry Allen in DCEU. What if Barry Allen, Ezra Miller's Barry Allen, is like a huge fan of Back to the Future? And so, like, when he goes back in time, he's making all these references. He's like, this is just like Back to the Future. Sort of like when he brought up Pet Sematary in Justice League.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny.
And he's like geeking out about Back to the Future. That would be awesome.
That would be kind of funny. They reaffirmed that Kathy Yan, is that her name?
Yep.
Is directing the Birds of Prey film, which... features Harley Quinn, as that's been established, and that looks to be going, from what I remember of the article, in front of the cameras, either by the end of 2018 or early 2019. So that's great news.
In terms of the DCEU film, so I'm not including the Joaquin Phoenix Joker, I think that's the next one that goes into production.
I'll get into that because I have a sort of production schedule mapped out in my head, right? It may be not accurate, but it's my theory. But I'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
Then the article also talked about Matt Reeves as the Batman. Finally, we got some information, some kind of update on the Batman. Now, what they've said is that Matt Reeves has turned in about 30 pages of his script to Warner Brothers. He did that on Memorial Day weekend. What I find interesting about that is I'm getting the sense that there's a level of control and secrecy on Matt Reeves' part that parallels the creative freedom that Christopher Nolan had with the Dark Knight trilogy. Because remember, we'd always hear that, you know, actors would have to go to his house or he'd go to their house and sit in a room with them to read the script. We'd always hear about that, you know. And so this is very similar. The fact that Matt Reeves is only giving Walter Hamada 30 pages at a time suggests to me that he doesn't want, you know, anything to leak or you know, he doesn't want a scenario where, remember when Suicide Squad came out, we're getting all the information, but then when it actually started filming, we'd get, you know, set pictures and we saw the Batmobile running around Toronto and all that stuff. It seems to me like he wants to run a much tighter ship. And
did you get to see it?
I didn't get to go to set, which I was very upset about because, you know, Margot Robbie was in my city. I was more upset about Margot Robbie than the Batmobile. Like, yeah, it would have been cool to see the Batmobile, but really, I really wanted to get in and, you know, meet Margot Robbie.
Speaking of something shooting somewhere, I've heard a rumor that Doom Patrol is going to shoot in Atlanta, so I might, maybe I'll be able to see them.
Yeah, that's, well, if they are, you know, get yourself on, you know, try and get yourself on set. You know, make yourself useful, get coffees for the cast or something.
I never saw any of the Black Lightning cast members. Mm. I heard that my buddy Tony.
Well, they shot at night and you have a 4 o'clock bedtime, you know, in the afternoon, so that explains it.
My buddy Tony, who I've talked about in this show, he's the owner of my local comic shop. He saw him at the mall that my comic shop is in. He saw Chris Williams.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes. But unfortunately, he did not call me and tell me to get over there to go meet
Chris Williams. Well, it shows you what he thinks of you. what kind of friend is he? That's what I'm asking. That's my question. Do you get that sense about, you know, the secrecy, you know, the creative control? When you read something like he's only given 30 pages of it,
like, it didn't occur to me, but yeah, I see where you're coming from there. Yeah, I think you could be right. Yeah.
Now they've also shed some other light, and that is that what they're hearing is that in those 30 pages, apparently indicate that Matt Reeves' story will center on a younger Batman, and that. I'm not sighing because I don't like the idea of a younger Batman. I'm fine with that. But here's the next piece of wording that frustrates me. And it's simply that Ben Affleck is unlikely, in quotation marks, to return. Okay, I just, at this point, can we get something definitive on that and just move on one way or the other?
It's like we keep hearing, like, we just heard two rumors. That we heard one rumor that he was going to come back. We heard another rumor that he was going to go up on stage with Matt Reeves at Comic-Con.
But okay, here's the thing. Look, I don't know. I think his Twitter handle is Daniel R. No, look, I'm not
Daniel RPK.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's probably it. I'm not disrespecting the guy at all. He doesn't seem to be affiliated with anybody in terms of a site or a trade.
True, but apparently he's gotten stuff right in the past.
I understand that, but it's like, okay, here's the only reason I'll lend right now. Right now I want to lend more credence to the trades because of the trades. And now I think two or three of them are saying Ben Affleck is unlikely to return. Now, if Matt Reeves is going with a younger Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously it computes that makes sense that Ben Affleck would not be involved, correct? Because it's a younger Batman.
They could always de-age him. And he could play younger.
Or I'll counter you one better.
Uh-huh.
and I can't take credit for this theory. This is Mario at Revenge of the Fans.
Uh-huh.
He says that now he's not hearing this from sources, so don't go saying, don't go to Mario's Twitter and say that I said, that he said, I'm not saying that. His theory in his head is that there's a chance, you know, hypothetically, that Ben Affleck could be narrating this younger Batman adventure, right?
Uh-huh.
Starring his quote-unquote replacement. Because remember Ben Affleck in one of the Justice League interviews said he wanted to find a cool way to go out? That'd be a kind of cool way to make the transition, right? It's still his Batman set in the DC Films universe, but that, you know, that'd be a cool way. I think that'd make a cool transition.
So like he's narrating it like it's a flashback,
right?
Like
exactly. Yeah.
Well, ideally, I want him in the cape and cowl again, because I've said it before. It'll be a travesty with him being one of the best live action Batman ever. It'll be a travesty for him to be the only live action film Batman to never star in a solo film.
No, I get where you're coming from. But
that being said, I do. It could be cool to see that.
Like at the end of the day, if ultimately we can't have Ben Affleck anymore, then for whatever reason, whether it's him or whether it's a studio or whatever, that would be a cool way to go about it.
That could be cool. And there was a lot of voiceover in Live by Night, if I remember correctly. But it sounded really cool with him. So I sort of am giving that vibe.
But it also makes sense if you think about, we've known that Matt Reeves has said that he wants to do a noir detective-driven story. And those kind of movies often have voiceovers.
And it's also something that in the comics is often something we see with Batman, which is we get voiceover in the comics. So it sort of is cool there, cool in that sense too.
Yeah. So, and again, the curious wording, more curious wording in this article is that they said that it's, they keep mentioning a reboot, but I don't think it's a reboot in the sense that.
Did they call it? I don't think they call it a reboot in this article.
It was either Deadline or somebody's mentioning a reboot, but I don't think. I just want to clarify that when I hear the word reboot, I don't think in this case it means completely throwing away the continuity from before. What I think it means is just in the sense that Ben Affleck will probably not be Batman anymore. In that sense, it's
sort of a soft reboot in the way that Batman Forever was a soft reboot of the Burton Schumacher.
Same continuity, different, but exactly.
But yeah. And I mean, there's other, like, I think it was John Stevens who called the end of season 4 of Gotham a reboot. And obviously, it's not a reboot, it's just things are changing. So it's like, it's the same continuity, obviously, but season 5 is going to be very different.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I know some people are theorizing for a while. I've been theorizing for a while that that's going to be a complete reboot, and that's not going to be the case. I'm saying it right now. Maybe I'm going to have to eat crow on this, but I am 95% sure that obviously I completely hope it's not, but I'm like 95% sure as well. Even putting my own hopes aside, they're not going to reboot it literally.
Yeah, like, I'm going more along the lines of Batman Forever soft reboot kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so all this has led to me, you know, I've been thinking, and I've been thinking about first of all, what's filming next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because right now, and we're going to talk about these two films in a second. Right now, we've got Shazam next. Aquaman in December, right?
Yes.
Shazam in April.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman is filming now and is coming out. I want to say, is it November or December 1st?
November.
Of 2019.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so here's how I, just from what, you know, from the Hollywood Reporter article and some other things, I was just pure speculation. Mm-hmm. Here's how I think the production schedule of the film is going to go. I think Birds of Prey is next. Right?
Yeah,
actually, if we count, just for the sake of being 100% inclusive,
Joaquin Phoenix.
The Joaquin Phoenix Joker film, I think, is next. If September is the date,
yeah,
then I think that goes first. Then I think Birds of Prey.
Yep.
And then I see Flash. Those are the next three.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agree with you there.
What I think we're going to hear at Comic-Con, right? Mm-hmm. Because part of the article said Walter Hamada isn't going to start dating films far off into the, far flung into the, he's not going to, at least they may have internal conversations, mm-hmm. but they're not going to come out and say, okay, in 2025, this is coming up, right?
Yeah.
Remember how they did that investor meet and they had the slate of from 2016 to 2020?
Yeah, they're not going to do that. So
that official, those kind of releases, forget about it. They're just going to tell you, as the films get closer to going into production, that's when they're going to let us know.
Yeah.
Right? So with that in mind, here's what I think is what we're going to get at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're definitely, obviously, they're going to bring Aquaman there. I mean, James Wan is confirmed. So we're going to see the first Aquaman trailer at Comic-Con. And I cannot wait.
Well, that in a second. There's also a rumor that maybe in a few days we're going to get, maybe even tomorrow as of us recording this, we're going to get a trailer.
Well, I'm just going on what James Wan said. And he said in no uncertain terms that the first trailer will debut at Comic-Con.
Could he mean the first full trailer, though, and that we're getting a teaser trailer?
I have no idea. Look, I'd love to get a trailer tomorrow. I'm just going based on...
Well, I understand. Could he be meaning? Because sometimes they don't count the teaser as an actual trailer.
So I mean, it's possible, but...
Yeah.
Just based on actual information?
Okay, yeah.
It's Comic-Con.
Yeah, okay.
I think they're also going to have a Shazam panel.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we get a teaser of some sort there, like a video, it remains to be seen.
But we already got a Shazam teaser, remember?
Yeah, the April Fool. I'm talking about a legitimate. Although that was funny, but and for a second I bought it. I'm like, oh! And then I'm like, damn it, son of a SOB fooled me.
David Sandberg is so funny.
He's great. But so I think we'll get Shazam. Whether we get a video, I don't know. But you know how people are bemoaning that we haven't got a quote-unquote official, like technically, if we haven't got an official still of Zachary Levi as Shazam?
Uh-huh.
Well, guess what? I think we're going to get it at Comic-Con, guaranteed. At the very least that. And probably Sandberg will be there and Levi and the cast, and they'll be talking about it. Because I think this will be the only Comic-Con they have, right? Before the film comes out, the only San Diego Comic-Con, right? Because the film comes out in April, right? Yeah.
So, well, I mean, there's smaller cons.
Right, but the big one, this is the only big, So I think we may, in fact, get some kind of teaser trailer as well.
You know how at panels they always give all the cast members water bottles?
Yeah.
What if they give them all those big cups and they're all slurping on
them? Oh, that's genius marketing. I hope they do that. I hope they do that. So the point is they're going to hype up Shazam for sure because, And they're probably going to be something Wonder Woman related because that's filming. And it's conceivable that Gal and Patty could hop on a plane and go there. But I think Wonder Woman will have some presence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think we're going to get a super hyped up slate because Walter Hamada just said he's not going to do that. Or the Hollywood Reporter said that Walter Hamada is not going to do that.
Yeah.
So given that, what I do think might will happen, I think we'll get some sort of confirmation of Joaquin Phoenix, the Joker thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this sneaking suspicion that while they won't give us 100% date, like release date,
mm-hmm.
I think Henry Cavill is going to be brought on stage. And he's going to introduce Christopher McQuarrie as the director of the next Superman film.
Whoa.
That's just my theory.
Okay.
There's just been too much chatter recently from Cavill himself over the past few weeks and months. And McQuarrie starting to mention it. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
that to me, to believe that that's just nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So I'm getting the vibe. And then Henry Cavill, I'm not one to go play Instagram detective, but Henry Cavill did post a video of himself working out because he was mentioning his Justice League nomination, right? For Action Star or whatever.
Oh, for Teen Choice Awards.
Right. And he said, you know, he was thanking the fan for the nomination. And he said, you know, vote for me if you want, because sooner rather than later, you're going to be seeing me in blue in blue tights or blue spandex or some sort of mention of in that regard. So that, unless he's playing, you know, a ballerina in a blue tutu in the near future, he's getting ready for something. And it sounds Superman related. Right? I don't know. To me, I think that's going to happen. I really, in my heart of hearts, believe that's going to happen. I'm not hearing that, you know.
Well, we are hearing that. I think Mario sort of teased that we could get an announcement.
Well, I know. He's saying that, but what I want to stress that, no, Mario's not giving me insider information. Shame on him. He should be, you know, because I write for Revenge of the Fans. No, I'm kidding. But you know, I'm just joking. But yeah, so I think that's gonna happen. But beyond the revelations of those two films, you know, those are the ones that aren't directly, you know, right on the release horizon that I think we'll hear about.
Mm.
I don't expect Matt Reeves to be there, despite what Daniel RPG RPK RPS whatever his name is.
I think it's RPK.
Yeah, whatever it is. I'd be shocked if Matt Reeves is there talking about Batman, because what's he going to do? Come out and say, all right, I just handed in another 30 pages, so we're up to 60 now. You know, but so that's what, those are my theories. That's my,
okay.
That's all my right. theory, yeah.
Cool. All right. Are we ready to move on to some pictures from these films that we're talking about?
Let's talk about it, yeah.
Oh my goodness, dude. Okay. So, first off, we got two pictures from Wonder Woman 84
three now.
On the 13th. And then, a few days later, we got a third one that Gal Gadot posted on social media. So, I'll just go ahead, starting with the first one that we got, which was Steve Trevor in a very 80s-looking mall type of setting. With this guy with a really funny porn stash in the background.
Was it Henry Cavill?
No, but this mustache actually kind of looks like Henry Cavill's. But I guess I'll talk about this first picture first and just say, I'm hoping that he's either, first of all, the picture's awesome, but
yeah.
I'm hoping, and I think that it's either a hallucination or that it's his Steve Trevor's descendant, like we saw in the Wonder Woman TV show.
Yeah.
And then it's not actually Steve Trevor being resurrected or
something. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think as well. I think the only other... Look, I'm of the belief, like you said, I think it might be either ghosts,
uh-huh.
or, you know, a spirit.
Yeah, hallucination, or, something like that. Something.
Yeah, or Steve Trevor Jr., you know, the grandson.
Yeah.
There is the off chance... Now, here's what I'll say. That it sort of is Steve Trevor. And what I mean by that is, remember, Wonder Woman is has a connection to the ancient gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if one of them either not resurrects, but creates a I don't know what the word is, like an avatar of Steve Trevor, and that it's really he starts out with, or this quote-unquote Steve Trevor, starts out, you know, Wonder Woman's happy to see him, and she's all whatever. The love is flowing and all that stuff. And then he's part of the villainous plot because he's being manipulated by or this spiritual, or whatever this is, this avatar, because I'll go with that because I like that term, of Steve Trevor, is actually a villainous and brought about by a god, like one of the gods.
Interesting.
That's the only other thought I have.
That's possible. Okay, I could see that.
Those are the three things I thought of.
You just like the term Avatar because that's the name of a Batman the Animated Series episode, right?
Yeah, that could be true as well. But also, look, I know you don't like Resurrections, and I feel sorry for you when it comes time to meet the man upstairs. again, just to be clear, I will not help you out. I'm going to wear a bag over my head saying, I don't know this guy. Don't ask me. But anyway, no, what I'm gonna say is, look, if it is actual 19, 14, 18, whatever it was, Steve Trevor, for right now, I am going to put my absolute trust in Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns that they know what they're doing and they have one hell of a story reasoning behind it. And for now, I'm giving them that benefit of the doubt. That's what I'll say if it is actually Steve Trevor.
Okay.
I don't think it is. But
yeah, I don't think it is either. But the picture's awesome.
If it is, Patty's earned, at least for now, has earned, let me see how you've done it. And then we'll go from there. So I will give her that benefit of the doubt if it is it. But you're right. The picture is awesome. But you know, the mall, it reminded me of a mall in the 80s. And then the other picture that gal, I think, tweeted.
She tweeted. I think she might have tweeted this one too, but she tweeted the third one.
She tweeted the second one as well.
Okay.
And Patty did the Steve Trevor one.
Patty did the Steve Trevor
one. And gal did the one where she's looking at the screens, and there's all
like,
this.
Reminded me of Bruce and Lucius in The Dark Knight. Did you think of that?
Yeah, but you know what else I thought of? Michael Keaton in Batman '89 looking at the screens. I mean, it wasn't.
I could see that too. Right. I didn't think of that. I thought of Bruce and Lucius, but yeah, I could see that too.
And somebody did this thing with the. They posted a picture of the CGI lip. You know, Henry Cavill's mouth.
Uh huh.
And just the sort of angry, confused look on Gal Gadot's face had me in stitches. I was dying. but, you know, going back to all the 80s imagery, you know, like they had, you know, obviously war imagery. I guess she's watching some sort of news.
No Batman 89 on there.
Well, I think that would be a little bit, you know. I mean, I guess. But no, because Batman wouldn't have made his debut then. Would he have?
See, 20 years in Gotham in 2016.
No,
that would have been 96 that he would have made
doesn't
his
work.
Debut.
The theory doesn't work.
Oh, man.
but no, like, you know, they had shots from Dallas and you see J.R. Ewing. And it was a Cagney and Lacey sort of reference. There was all kinds of different 80s visuals on the screen, and you know, I thought that was really cool. And you know, I was born in 83, so in the DC film universe, I am 1 year old at the time of Wonder Woman 1984, so I'm out there. And spoilers for are you planning on seeing Infinity War?
Yes.
Do you mind if I spoil it?
No. I don't mind.
Well, I like the fact that I'm 1 year old in Wonder Woman 1984, as opposed to being killed by Thanos in 2018. Thank you very much. That's why I always make mine DC, and that's all I got to say about that.
That wasn't a spoiler, really.
I mean, yeah, you probably read it by now. But yeah, so I love both pictures. I think they're both great. And then the third one, my God, the third one. I mean, it's Gal Gadot in her full on as Wonder Woman.
Yep.
And this was, I gotta give credit to the studio because they knew they were gonna be filming outdoors, and before any, you know, pirated, you know, cell phone imagery could leak, they said, we're gonna give you an official image. And I mean, does Gal Gadot get more beautiful by the second? Because I seriously think she might. The suit looks perfect. You know, her hair is not it has a hint of the 80s, but it's not full on 80s, if you get what I mean. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, actually.
I don't know. I do you get the sense that the suit looks a little bit brighter?
You know, I wasn't sure about that because I can't tell if it's actually the suit or whether it's whatever's around her in that image is okay. Just reflecting off of it and make because okay. You see there's a bunch of bright stuff in the background of the image, and I'm not sure if it's just a reflection from that or if it's actually the suit is brighter color.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, but it does look a little bit. It certainly looks brighter than BBS. Definitely from that first picture we saw, but.
And if that is the case, that makes sense to me because it's weathered in BVS. She's had it longer and she's been through more at that
point.
Right. And so this is like it's so bright and it hasn't gotten dull.
So then would that make the Justice League costume a newer? I mean, how do you clean that, right? Because it was brighter in Justice League than it was in BVS.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
I guess.
So my question is.
She could probably shine it somehow.
Did she have another one, or did she take it to like? What? I'm sure there was a god there is a god. I just don't know the name. You know, the one that made her weaponry and her armor. So there could have been like she could have gone to that one and said, "Hey, you know, somewhere off screen, said, clean this up for me, damn it."
Is it Hestia? Is it Hestia? Because she has the lasso of Hestia.
Possibly, yeah. So maybe. Went to her head
but
and said, "You know,
I feel like she could
fix
I feel
this
like...
shit for me."
Even beyond that, she could, like, probably shine it somehow. Like, you shine a shoe or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess. I don't know the process on that is. But it's something I clearly haven't put too much thought into.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I had to
Yeah, but listen, maybe she got offered. She's like, listen, Bruce, we're going to be hanging on your cape. Make that old guy useless. Get him to clean my... shine my thing.
And he stuck it on a bat hanger when he was done, Jamie Drewley.
Yeah, oh boy, you're just pissing him off. You're just riding him up. And sorry, Andy, Blue Devil was not in the cave. We're just shattering dreams tonight. But yeah, so I mean, those pictures are just phenomenal. I cannot, honest to God, I can't wait for Wonder Woman 2.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've said it. But it's my favorite of the DC shared universe. So
it hasn't come out yet.
Well, no, Wonder Woman 1.
I mean, I know what you meant. But, yeah.
But hey, if these pictures are any indication, it's got a good shot. Speaking of pictures.
Oh, my goodness.
What about the water porn that is the Aquaman pictures?
Oh, my God. Goodness, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we got... Not only did we get a bunch of pictures thanks to Entertainment Weekly from Aquaman, but also two amazing covers. So, okay. So, I guess I'll just... I've got the image gallery of all of them up here. Thanks to Batman on Film, Bill put together a nice little image gallery that you can flip through nice and easy. We've got one where it's like... Okay, I guess I'll start. This isn't one of the most exciting ones, but it is an awesome shot. It's Arthur just like sort of swinging on a pole or something with this water around him.
This is the Magic Mike, the third film.
After I said that, I realized how that came out. And I was
can
like,
you imagine Deathstroke? Because not Deathstroke can show up because Joe Manganiello, right?
Steel Maxim can show up as Dr. Fate.
Oh, boy. I still can't believe I saw that in an animated movie, but go on.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I'm like... Eric Holzman on the Batman on Film Facebook group, he brought up a Dr. Fate. He brought up that he wants to see a Dr. Fate movie, and I agreed with him. I'm like, totally. And then I brought up, maybe you know how they're always trying to create synergy with the DCU AOM. Maybe they're going to do Steel Maxim as the Dr. Fate.
Can I tell you something about Dr. Fate, just as an aside?
Sure.
You know where Dr. Fate would be perfect?
Where?
The streaming service.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I was talking about, just we're off topic now, but whatever.
We always do. This is nothing new.
We do. we just love talking DC so much.
Steven loves when we go off topic. He loves our extended podcast. Steven loves our...
Steven, I'm glad to hear that, Steven. I'm glad. I enjoy them, too. It means we get to talk.
I know Travis Hines likes the podcast when it goes long because he does those, you know... across Canada trips, so he enjoys them too. So
And I'll
this
say,
is for you guys.
as a podcast listener, I certainly appreciate when other podcasts go along because it means I get to hear more talk about DC. So I'm always down for it. But so hopefully everybody's enjoying this. But
if not, but, they've left already. But whatever.
I've been waiting for maybe Dr. Fate to show up in the Arrowverse because remember we saw his helmet on Constantine, and so that's where I've been waiting for him to show
no,
up.
No, I just put that together because if you look at Swamp Thing and the supernatural aspect of
sure, that would fit. Yeah, maybe he'll show up on Swamp Thing, and then maybe they'll do what they did with Doom Patrol with Titans and spin him off in his own show. Who knows? That'd be cool.
I'm down for that. Whoever's working on that, get on that.
I mean, we've already seen him great on Smallville. Got to shout that out.
But, okay, Aquaman on a pole. Continue.
Well,
that's
you know
for you, that's for you, ladies. Enjoy it.
You know
what
that
visual.
I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I think it was with his trident. I don't think he was on a pole, but.
That does not look like his trident to me. I think it's. He's grabbing. It looks like he's grabbing on to like trying to hold on. Like maybe it looks like he's in that maybe that submarine from that first.
Yeah,
because
there's like a tidal wave or water coming at him.
Yeah, maybe like this. Maybe it's that same. I think it was a submarine maybe that he was in before.
Yeah,
that was just some speculation on my part. But maybe it got like ruptured, like you know it broke or something, and the water's coming in. And he's holding on, trying to you know. You know, anyway, that's just some speculation there.
That's
then the
cool.
second one we got Chase Meridian holding a young Arthur, talking to somebody we can't really tell who it is. My guess is that
I
it's probably
it's
Tom Curry.
Father.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's Tom Curry too, but we don't know for sure. But yeah, that's really cool. Chase Meridian. I mean, Queen Atlanta.
Well, hey, listen. Martha Kent. Queen Atlanta have all had intercourse with Batman on some level.
No, I'm pretty sure Bruce never slept with Chase in Batman Forever.
Well, he wanted to. Well, hold on a second. Wait a minute. We don't know what happened. We don't know what happened when the credits rolled.
Well, we know he was with Julie Madison in the next film.
Well,
so.
That's because continuity be damned. But, you know.
Anyway.
Probably because Nicole Kidman read the script and said, yeah, for nuts. That's probably why. Because
what?
It's probably because Nicole Kidman read the script for Batman and Robin and said to Joel Schumacher, are you effing nuts? I'm not doing this.
It's not that bad, Adam.
There we are. Well, people can listen to our podcast when you drop it.
It's not out yet.
No, but when you drop it, they can listen to it.
It's an enjoyable film, Adam.
I was very kind. Spoiler alert, I was reasonably kind.
He was. He actually was. He was more kind than I thought he was going to be.
Out of respect for our guest, who I appreciated her enjoyment of that film, I was very kind. So
yes.
I pat myself on the back. I just did it now. You can't see it, but I did it. So, yeah, continue. Describe the pictures. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just fainted because of this next one with Amber Heard.
Oh, well, yeah, that's...
But
I'm not giving you mouth-to-mouth now, but... I agree.
Maybe she will.
Well, I highly doubt that, but you can dream. All right, go ahead.
This next one with Arthur and Mara on land with, like, a map is really, really cool. It is really cool. So it looks like maybe they'll be on land trying to find something or something.
Yeah.
But, oh, my goodness, Amber Heard is just absolutely gorgeous.
She's, you know what? I just want to say this. You guys want to do a team-up film? I'll give you one. I don't care what the story is, but just Wonder Woman, Mira, and Harley Quinn. Make it happen. I don't know. Have Geoff Johns write it because whatever he writes turns to gold. And just make that movie. You want a $1 billion hit? That'd be $1 billion. I'll give you $1 billion myself.
Then the next one, we've got David Hyde. Well, in the comics, he's David Hyde. There was an article from the Entertainment Weekly that referred to him as David Kane. So maybe they're changing his name for this movie. But anyway, he's looking at a prototype. Maybe it'll be the final helmet, but they called it a prototype of the Black Manta helmet. And it looks every bit as amazing as you'd expect it to be, seeing this Black Manta helmet. And I'm just as enamored with the helmet as David seems to be in this image, to be honest.
If that's the prototype, I can't wait to see what the actual one looks like, because that thing looks incredible.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. If it is the, I'm totally with you. If it is the real thing, awesome. If it's not the real thing, then yeah, what is the real thing?
What's he going to look like in full costume? Good God, that's going to be amazing.
I can't wait for that reveal. You think that'll be in the first trailer?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think either way at Comic-Con, we're going to get a full reveal of him as Black Manta one way or another, whether it's a picture or a form or...
That would be cool. Here's a theory for you. So you know how Ocean Master is the main villain of this movie?
Yeah.
I think that the sequel is going to deal with Aqualad and Black Manta.
Well, I'd be down for that.
Would that not be cool? Did you read the Teen Titans arc where they dealt with
they brought in Yeah.
Was that like if they did something like really that? Good, yeah. Yeah, but like incorporated Aquaman more heavily.
Yeah.
Because I know James. I was speculating that maybe we'd see Aqualad in the first film and just a tease. James Wan said that he didn't want to introduce. He just wanted to set up Aquaman first, and then he didn't want to deal with.
And that makes sense. Yeah.
And that does make sense. It makes total sense. But I think that he will bring him for the second film. And oh my goodness.
But you know what else? So cool. You know what else I loved?
What's that?
They released the concept art from Atlantis. If you saw.
I didn't see it. I heard about it on DC Daily Drop, and I was like, where was that? I didn't.
Oh, I saw it. It was all over Twitter. You just got to search. Oh, you can. It's funny.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I'll be back on there soon. It's not on, because, yeah, it's not in this image. I didn't see it on
it was posted on Twitter, but.
So it wasn't part of the Entertainment Weekly stuff?
I think it was, but it just wasn't posted on some of the sites.
Okay.
But it looks, I mean, somebody did a side-by-side comparison with one of Geoff Johns' arcs of the New 52 and the concept art, and it's almost identical, and it's beautiful. I'm like, I can't wait to see full-on Atlantis. I can't wait. Like, we're going to a different world.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we saw it a little bit in Justice League.
Right, but we saw a portion. I'm talking about fully expanded. Like, I want a wide shot of friggin' Atlantis.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Look, I gotta get back. Guys, here's a free extra reading recommendation. If you have not read Geoff Johns' New 52 Aquaman run, I don't care what you're doing. Go to Comixology right now. And at the very least, buy the first volume. it's amazing. And to hear that this movie is going to be based on that. But not only that, it's going to incorporate story ideas that Geoff Johns had for a follow-up run that he wasn't able to do because of time and whatnot. And that got me.
Now he's got more time.
No, but keep it for the film then. Like,
you're right, I'm just joking. Tying into our other news that we were talking about.
But so, you guys don't understand. I just can't wait. Like, if you would have asked me, you know, before the New 52, are you excited for an Aquaman movie? I would have said, they're never going to make that. Are you nuts?
I wouldn't have thought they were going to make it necessarily, but I would have still been very excited if they did.
Yeah, but I would have just said, they're not going to. Right? And I've tried, honestly, I've tried Aquaman several times to get into him, the book. Just want to clarify that.
My goodness.
Because that sounded as weird as your poll thing. we're getting really weird on this episode. But there are two runs that I love. It's the 90s Peter David run, which is there's an omnibus up on Comixology.
Hook Hand Aquaman?
Yes. and now the Geoff Johns stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And guys, I think this movie is going to surprise a lot of people in terms of quality, but I think it's gonna do good business at the box office. And I think my only concern is that I kind of want it to move from the 21st to the 14th because of competition.
But isn't there a lot of competition even if they move it up, though, still?
Well, as of right now, if it stays there on the 21st, also opening that day are Alita Battle Angel, which I'm not too concerned about because anime live-action adaptations don't do well in North America, typically. So I'm not too concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Transformers Bumblebee film on the same day as well. And if I remember...
Written by Batgirl and Birds of Prey writer Christina Hodson.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the first trailer, for the teaser trailer for Bumblebee. Unrelated, but kind of related. You'll see why in the future. But
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, wow. Well, it's one of the rare times Jordan actually knows what I'm talking about. But
that's
I think
not true.
If I'm also not mistaken, I think that Mary Poppins Returns also comes out on that day. I think. So something's got to move because if all three come out on that day, we're in trouble. All three movies are in trouble because you're eating into, like, look, Bumblebee and Aquaman are going to have overlapping audiences. You throw in Mary Poppins and the fact that Disney seems to strike gold 9.5 times out of 10 they put something out. Something's got to move. And we've heard rumblings about Aquaman potentially moving to the 14th. So that's not confirmed. But if it is happening, I suspect...
Well, it's already moved in other countries.
Right. So if it is happening in North America, which I think it probably end up will, we might hear about that at Comic-Con. But these Aquaman pictures are
these Aquaman pictures. We got to get to the next one. Yes. We got Mera and Arthur and Volko and James Wan with that map, which maybe is the same map that Mera and Arthur are looking at on the surface. But anyway, this is what you're talking about with how cool Atlantis looks. Look how cool that this room that they're in looks in this picture. Oh, my goodness. That's so cool.
It's amazing. I mean, just... I think this movie is the one time where I'm... Like, I always get them, especially when it's a DC movie. But the making of the art of the film...
Oh, it's going to be a beautiful book. I can't wait.
I can't wait to buy that.
Oh, man, that's going to be a cool book. Next up, we've got Aquaman facing off with Ocean Master. And, dude, let me just tell you right now, even just from this picture, I am intimidated by Patrick Wilson's Ocean Master. He looks scary.
Yeah. He's and I really like him as an actor. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to bring...
His Night Owl is one of my favorite parts of Watchmen.
Yeah.
He's so good as Night Owl.
And I think he's going to bring an antagonism, you know, with him and Arthur that is really, really intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Then we got one of the first cover, which is Arthur with all this water coming down around him, just looking really fierce and intense. Very cool. And then the second cover... is, I think it's even cooler. It's Arthur in the forefront with his Quindent. And then we've got Chase Meridian behind him and Mera behind him on the other side, both in their suits, which is sort of, well, we got Mera's suit in the other picture too, but also revealing both their suits, her suit and Queen Atlanta's suit, like their full look. And man, those suits look awesome. Aquaman looks awesome. This cover's awesome.
yeah. It's... I was just floored when I saw these.
Oh, yes. I think I saw the covers first, actually, before I saw anything else.
So did I. I had come home, and then I hopped online. And it's like, oh, wow. It came flooding in. No pun intended. And
they look outrageous!
Yeah. Yeah, I still hope he doesn't say that in the movie.
Oh, you hope he does, or he doesn't?
At least not like that.
No. Like we already talked about this, dude. I don't think he's gonna say it like that, but he better say it. Like he can. Like we talked about this. They can pull it off even in a serious movie. They can have him say, you know, he. You
well,
can. Totally
yeah, I guess they kind of did with Booyah with
Cyborg. Exactly with Cyborg. they could do it. He just, he's surfing on one of his sea dragons, and he leaps off, and he's just like, he whips his hair around, and he's just like outrageous. Like, you could totally see Jason Momoa saying that, I think.
Probably. Oh yeah, I could, yeah.
Like when he was surfing on the Batmobile in Justice League, I was actually just coincidentally rewatching Justice League today. Yeah. God, I love that movie. I freaking love that movie.
I do too.
But yeah, and when he just yells, yeah, I could totally see that being an outrageous.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I can see it. All right, so that's all our pictures. I say all as if there wasn't that many. There was a ton, and they were all amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so that's it for our film news. Moving on to our TV news, Adam.
Yeah.
We've got a bunch of news about some actors not being series regulars next year in the Arrowverse, some actors becoming series regulars next year in the Arrowverse. First of all, Kenan Lonsdale, of course, Wally West on The Flash and Legend of Tomorrow, he is not going to be a series regular on either show next season, unfortunately. He says this isn't the end for him, that he said this isn't – I think he sent out a tweet that was like, this isn't goodbye forever, this is just see you later. So it looks like he's not going to be series regular next year, which is kind of a bummer. I know I've sort of – on The Flash, I've always liked Kenan Lonsdale in the role, but I've just always wanted – I always wanted him to be played with more humor. And then once he got to Legends, they finally started doing that with him, and I started really loving what they were doing with him. So it's kind of a bummer that we're not going to see as much of him next season, but hopefully he'll still be around. I think I heard that he was going to be in the premiere, which makes sense because we saw him in the finale. So hopefully we'll still see a fair amount of him, but it is kind of a bummer we're not going to see as much.
I mean, I enjoyed him in the role, but I thought he was currently underused. So I could see why he's moving on. And then also, when you consider the people they are promoting, right, it makes sense where you're going to put all these. How are you going to have screen time for all these? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's an ensemble show, so like sometimes you see like it's hard to give storylines to everybody. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm still going to miss him. So, alrighty, moving on to The Flash. Well, we're sort of already talking about The Flash, but more so Legends. Moving on to talk about somebody who is going to become a series regular is Cecile is becoming a series regular on The Flash season 5, which I guess sort of makes sense to me. I think season 4 she had her biggest role ever on the show, and so and now of course with her and Joe having the kid, it sort of makes sense that she'd be even more so on the show. So I've really liked her on the show, I'm excited to see what they. I'm very curious what they do with her, where the storyline goes with her and Joe. I'm excited to see more of her.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense given what you said about they had the kid, and so it's an obvious choice. We'll see what happens. We'll see where they go with it.
Indeed. She's not the only Flash character to become the series regular. This is one, if you remember on our Flash review, I actually predicted, not that it was like that much of a, like that hard to predict, like it wasn't like a crazy, like out there prediction, but Ralph Dibny is becoming a series regular in season 5 of The Flash as well. So we are going to be seeing a lot more of Elongated Man this season. We saw a lot of him. I feel like this is an identical situation to Lois Lane on Smallville. In season 4, she was there for half the episode that she wasn't a series regular, and then in season 5, she became a series regular. Looks like we're getting the same thing with Elongated Man. I loved him this season. I thought he was hilarious. I cannot wait to see more of Elongated Man in season 5.
No, I mean, I'm down with seeing more. You know, I had small issues with him in our Flash review, but ultimately, Brandon, our guest host, kind of not swayed, but sort of reminded me that I liked more of him than I didn't. So I'm okay with this.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then finally, in terms of our,
TV.
People becoming series regulars, Jesse Rath is going to become a series regular on season 4 of Supergirl. Of course, Brainiac 5, Yeah. I loved him on season three. Season three is not over, and I think he's actually going to be in the finale. Him and Saturn Girl are coming back. So we will see a little bit more of him in season three before he becomes a series regular in season four. I love him in the role. I think he has so much personality and just plays Brainiac 5 really well. And I love his banter with Wynn. I just think that's just been so much fun. And I'm really excited. I always talk about that show No Tomorrow on the CW that got canceled after one season that he was on, and he was so great on that show. And so then as soon as he got cast as Brainiac 5, I was like really excited to see him again on another show I love, Supergirl, of course.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited to see more of him in season four, and to see more, you know, Legion connections there. And of course, I mean, I don't know if Saturn Girl, maybe we'll hear eventually that Saturn Girl is going to become a series regular too. I don't know, maybe. But I am curious whether they'll wind up going the route of the, you know, Supergirl and Brainiac 5 have had a thing in the past, so I wonder if they'll go that route at all. I mean, it sort of looks like they're going to bring Supergirl and Mon-El back together right now, so we'll see. But anyway, I'm just very excited.
Yeah, I mean, with him, I liked his portrayal. It very much sort of lines up with what the experiences I've had with the character in the comics. And it's also a case of, you know, visually in live act in motion, he looked better than the still image. But yeah, I mean, I like the way the actor plays him, and so I'm definitely down for more. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, moving on to a little bit more TV news, which is that Gotham has a shooting date now, that Gotham season 5 will begin shooting on July 23rd, which hopefully means, even though I won't be seeing it, maybe my OTP will be shooting together, and we'll be getting some Batcat scenes that are getting shot that, of course, I'll have to wait till probably January. I think I forgot to mention this on our last episode, but in addition to Cameron Bikanova saying that she heard Gotham season 5 would only be 10 episodes, she also heard that it was going to premiere in January. But anyway, I'm so excited for season 5 to see, well, of course, all the scenes, hopefully, with my OTP, with the Batcat relationship, but also with just everything with No Man's Land that they set up at the end of season 4. Like, it's my favorite current DC TV show, as I've said before, and I'm so hyped for season 5.
Yeah, no, I mean, we both said that we were happy with the renewal, and so this, of course, has me excited. So, yeah, can't wait for them to start shooting. Is there anything else you wanted to mention TV-wise?
No, but there is something that you wanted to mention.
That's why I wanted to make sure that you were done before I jumped in with my bit of news, and that is, for the last 2 weeks, you've heard me make a plea to the listeners to join in on the hashtags of Save Lucifer and Pick Up Lucifer. Well, good news. The hashtagging campaign that has been going strong for 5 weeks since the show got canceled on Fox has worked, because Lucifer is getting a season 4 via Netflix. All the cast is coming back. The creative team is being brought back, so I want to definitely express my congratulations to the creative team and the cast and everybody involved. You know, I'm gonna do what we're gonna do in a way to cover Lucifer on this show is Travis is gonna come on, and we're gonna do a, because Jordan hasn't watched the series, so Travis is doing a rewatch of Lucifer now. And so when he's done with that, we will record an episode talking about the first 3 seasons, the third of which featured Smallville alumni Tom Welling. So we'll be talking about that.
And Arrow alum Sebastian Blood, he's on the show too,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. That's Kevin Alejandro, that's right. And so we're gonna be doing an episode on that. That's gonna be really fun, but yeah. And so because we're gonna be doing an episode next week when Supergirl ends, I will include it in my front. And when we do our, when we, whenever we do our Supergirl season finale video, what I'm going to do, and maybe Jordan can do this too, so he can start thinking about it, is his, is make his DC TV list of the order of which he liked all the shows. So start thinking of that now.
Just this current season.
Yeah.
Okay.
So start thinking about that, and we'll include, and we'll do that at the end of the Supergirl episode. So start, you know,
cool,
formulating your list. Of course, you can't finalize anything Supergirl related because you haven't seen the ending yet. But
right
after as of this recording tomorrow, you will have. So
yes, I'm so excited.
So and the reason I say that is because mine will, my list will somewhere on it include Lucifer, because Lucifer is a DC / Vertigo character. So my list will include Lucifer because I've seen it, so I can include it. But I'm very happy about the renewal. I want to, you know, I love the show, and I can't wait for more. And damn you, Netflix, because now I got to pay for a subscription. I promised whichever streaming service picked up Lucifer, I would subscribe.
I will say I'm a little bit surprised that it wasn't DC Universe streaming service, because just for this fact that I would imagine that DC would want to be consolidating things to that right now, you know, as much as possible, and trying to get as much as they could on them. So I'm a little bit surprised.
I was a little surprised too, but I think it also goes back to Netflix has a quite a working relationship with Warner Brothers. And because this show isn't connected to really any of the other DC, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I don't really consider it a DC show since it's Vertigo.
No, but because like if you look at the way the you know, for example, the CW early on said they couldn't take Lucifer because they had basically no room for it, essentially.
Yeah.
But it kind of wouldn't have fit, because they already have a show with a Lucifer character that appears in Supernatural, so it would be counterintuitive. But then again, I mean, it doesn't make, like, when you think of all the connected quote unquote DC stuff, you know, CW wouldn't have made sense. But then if you look at the streaming service, it seems like the current shows that are going on there are going to have some sort of connectivity, you know, with Doom Patrol and possibly, you know, Titans and Doom Patrol, but then I'll possibly, if you add in Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
So I think
it's Metropolis.
Whatever that ends up becoming. Yeah. So I think they want to keep things to where you can, especially the action stuff, where it is quote unquote all connected. So I think that's part that might have played a factor into it.
That makes sense. That could be.
Also, there's a case to be made where the DC Universe streaming service probably wants to see what their subscription levels look like, because, you know, they've got to pay for all the shows they've got currently going. So to add another one where you have to renegotiate cast deals and such, without knowing what your base is, you have no real way to plan, you know, a budget and such like that, right?
That's true. Whereas, but the more shows you put on there, the more people.
Don't get me wrong. If they would have picked up Lucifer, they would have got an influx of subscribers.
Yeah.
Much like Netflix is going to, you know, because of it. So you're right. But because there was an expediency with the contract options for the cast of Lucifer, that they needed an answer by essentially by June 16th. Otherwise, the cast was free to start auditioning for other work. So a deal had to be struck relatively quickly. And that's probably why. I mean, if there was more time, I could have seen probably the DC streaming service stepping in after they had launched and you know, got everything off the ground. But because there was such a time crunch, I imagine that also played a part in it as well. But hey,
okay.
I'm happy that Netflix picked it up, and I'm getting my one of my favorite shows back. So it's all good.
Awesome.
So if you like Lucifer, be on the lookout for that episode. with me and Travis. We'll be talking about it.
Cool. Well, just one more piece of news that I wanted to touch on before we went on to Krypton, which is last week I talked about the news that Tom King was going to be appearing on Late Night with Seth Meyers, and that he did indeed. I watched it. Did you get a chance to check it out?
I did not, but I figured you were going to tell me about it, so I...
Yeah, that's what you said last episode, and I'm sticking to my promise, because, it was an awesome interview. Tom King did not really, announce anything new or anything, but he did sort of, he had some cool stuff to say, one of which was he told a hilarious story about, because obviously he used to be, in case anybody didn't know, he used to be a CIA agent, and he talked about how all the other CIA agents, when they would try to go, like, sort of be inconspicuous or whatever and go sort of undercover or whatever, they'd like wear like a nice suit or whatever and they'd look all professional, and he just looked like a comic nerd, so he'd be the one who was the best at that because nobody would suspect him of being a CIA agent. So I thought that was hilarious. He said he would like be on like a plane or whatever and he'd just have his stack of comic books that he'd be reading, and so I was like, oh, that is awesome. He talked a little bit about how his own marriage sort of has inspired Bruce and Selena's, how he writes Bruce and Selena's relationship, which is something he's talked about in many interviews. And I love hearing that so much, how he takes inspiration from, his own love for his wife with how he writes Bruce's love for Selena and, Selena's love for Bruce. And I think that's so beautiful that he does that. And so he talked a little bit about that. Seth Meyers even had a picture that he put up, like he has those cards or whatever that he uses, and the cover for issue number 50, the main cover, obviously, like I said, there's so many freaking beautiful variant covers. Oh my goodness. It's blowing my mind how many amazing, I just want them all framed on my wall. But anyway, I do think the main one is just one of the best. It's incredible. The Mikhail Yanin one, which is my desktop wallpaper right now.
There's a wraparound one that looks pretty cool. I will admit.
The wraparound one. Yes. Yeah, there's that one. My favorites are the main one and the Jim Lee one. Oh my goodness, the Jim Lee one.
Well, anything Jim Lee draws, I'm down for. So.
Yeah. Have you seen that one, the Jim Lee one?
Yeah, I actually got the Jim Lee variant for Justice League number one.
That was cool too. Yes, Batman perched like there with the bat, with the grapnel gun. Yeah, that was awesome. But no, this Batcat cover though that he has, which I love that Jim Lee Batcat cover so much, because it, to me, what it portrays is like, Tom King established in I Am Suicide that when Bruce and Selena are together, that, the pain of their respective past subsides. And to me, it's just them in that embrace like that, just with their foreheads touching, just looking at each other like that. It's just, to me, it signifies that. It's like that cover signifies, they were in pain and they found each other again, and they're happy again because of their love for one another. So I love that Jim Lee cover so much. But anyway, getting back to the Seth Meyers thing, he pulled up the main cover for that. He brought that up. They just talked a little bit. It was like 5 minutes. That's all it was. But it was really cool seeing that interview, seeing my favorite writer up there on Seth Meyers, and talking about one of the most exciting events in the history of my Bat fandom. So it was awesome.
Awesome.
Indeed.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. And that brings to a close our news portion.
Yes, so much news. Very long news portion this week. Yeah.
And now we're going to talk season one of Krypton. So,
spoilers.
If you are concerned about spoilers, now would be the time to go and finish watching the remainder of Krypton, or if you haven't started. Mario, Francisco Robles from Revenge of the Fans.
Oh, get on that, Mario. It's awesome.
You
said
you were going to watch it. Get going. The clock is ticking. And as I posted a couple of days ago on Twitter, I posted the, because you can't see it, it's Jordan. I posted the Judge Judy gif of her tapping her watch for Mario to start watching Krypton. So, so the clock is ticking, my friend. Go watch Krypton.
Yes. And if you're concerned about the Stephanie Brown kind of spoilers, then don't worry, because we're not talking about that right now. But she's awesome. So maybe one day we will talk about her.
Well, if she gets her own show on the streaming service, we'll have to talk about her.
But, dude, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
But no, we're talking about Krypton. So if you haven't watched or you're behind, go watch and then come back and play.
And Stephanie Brown's not on Krypton.
Yeah, no. That'd be
Wouldn't
kind of
that be
diff.
weird?
That'd be kind of, well, it wouldn't be difficult because time travel, but yeah. We'll see. But maybe future seasons. But yeah, so the spoiler wall, we're over it. So listen at your own peril. We talked about the pilot, and in the pilot we said that we praised it for, you know, sort of being a mixture of a, you know, having Man of Steel attributes, having Richard Donner attributes, and then throwing, you know, comic book nods throughout. And I think...
And some Smallville stuff.
Sure, yeah. And I think the season as a whole continued that trend. What I really loved about Krypton is that they promised us a deep dive into, you know, the politics of Krypton, the religion of Krypton, and they were true to their word on that. We got all that.
Yeah.
You know, like there was the whole scenario where was in Darren Vex,
mm-hmm.
and Nissa Vex at one point were working together to overthrow the council.
Yeah.
And also the voice of Ra. And so you saw that. But then, you know, there was that constant, you know, Darren Vex is a prick of a villain. he's kind of in league with, not in league, but he was very reminiscent of the duplicitousness of Lionel Luthor, if you will.
Yeah, I totally dig that comparison. And it's Father's Day today. He is not a good example of a father.
No, definitely not. no, he isn't winning any Father of the Year awards, that's for sure.
And I did like that eventually Nyssa did get the upper hand on him. And she
yeah, but you know, like, so, you know, he's originally they're out to overthrow the voice of Rao and the council.
Yeah.
But then how, the way he flip-flops and then ends up working with the voice of Rao to try and, you know, save his own ass and move himself up in the hierarchy of Krypton politics.
Yeah.
You know, was very interesting. But then also that, like you were saying, you know, Nyssa one-ups him and eventually, you know, via Segel and, you know, Lyta and her mother and the other person we'll talk about in a minute, who I don't want to spoil just yet. They go towards, they look to Jax Ur, who is spearheading the Black Zero.
And just to go back real quick, that scene, though, when Darren tries to shoot Nyssa, and then she gets the upper hand on him, and it turns out she's a hologram, and then...
Yeah, because she's the hologram, yeah.
That scene was so cool.
You know, that was kind of, not exactly, but it was a kind of a nod to Superman 2, when he has the bunch of holograms, and then he gets the upper hand.
Well,
yeah.
I did not think about that.
It wasn't exactly the same, but it was on that, you know, similar. But also, like, so you get all that. And that political intrigue,
mm-hmm.
but it's all, but it what you know, so then they align with Jax Ur and the Black Zero, you know, quote unquote terrorist group. But
talk about a scary woman, geez.
Yeah, and you know what I love about that? You know what I loved about that is that they, you know, in the comic books and in past media, you know, live action and otherwise, Jax Ur has always been male.
Uh huh. Yep.
But they did the switch, right?
Yeah.
And it was never made an excessively, you know, publicized thing in the media. Like it wasn't overhyped, is what I mean. As, oh, look what we're doing. We're changing. We're changing the sex of the character. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It was never overly hyped, which I appreciate. It just was. And then they relied on the actress's skill to just convey the core aspects of the character, which are a scientist and a warrior. And that's exactly what we got out of this character.
Yeah.
What I'm driving at is that I really just appreciated look, this is what it is. She's playing the character, and they kept the characters intact and didn't change the character to sort of assimilate to any sort of kind of gender stereotypes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So I love that aspect of it. And also within that, we get revelations about Nyssa, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which are, you know, the whole cloning aspect.
That was nuts. I did not see that coming.
And how she was in an actress. She was in an actress, which is another weird quotation if you interpret it wrong. But she was in an accident and you know, paralyzed to the point where her mother had died, and she was paralyzed to the point where they had to. What was the word they used for it? It was almost like a personality transplant, if you will, kind of thing. That's not what they called it, but it's kind of what it was, where they put her consciousness into the clone body, right?
It reminds me a little bit of what was that movie? The Scarlett Johansson movie that was based on an anime. Well, do you know what it was called?
I can't remember what it was called, but I know the movie you're talking about.
I'm gonna look it up.
But what I found interesting about it was
it Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell. Yeah. Is what it was called.
But isn't that interesting in the sense that weren't? I think there was a line about General Zod being sort of a. Like in Man of Steel, weren't they sort of genetically engineered? So in a sense, they're kind of like, not clones, but you get what I'm saying. It's a very similar idea where they're bred for a certain thing. And I found there was a lot of symmetry.
Well, yeah, it goes back to that speech from General Zod in Man of Steel that I always go back to. You know, everything I do is...
Yeah.
In the service of the people of Krypton, and now I have no people. But yeah, it's like, yeah.
But you see the symmetry, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And again, also...
Krypton taking some inspiration from, you know, that take on the Superman mythology.
Yeah, and also, the cool thing was the stuff with Jaxxer, basically what it boils down to is that she didn't want her mate, you know, the codex and the technology around that to be manipulated for ill use, but yet that's exactly what happened. That's what led her to becoming a quote unquote terrorist. And you could really, I thought you could sympathize with her plight.
Sure.
Quite a bit. Once they reveal what was going on. I thought that she was going to be in those scenes where she was talking with Nyssa. I thought she was going to be revealed to be her actual mother. That wasn't the case, but for a second there, I thought my theory was right. But
there was a lot in this season that sort of made you question who the real villain was. Like who's, you know, it was a lot of questions of not everything was so black and white. Like, you know, I thought that was really interesting. Like the whole central conflict of the season was, whether it was what you know, Adam Strange, him dealing with what the right thing to do was, because, you know, Krypton has to be destroyed in order for Superman to, you know, come into existence and then to come to Earth. And so it's like, well, not for Kal-El to be born, but, you know, for him to become Superman and come to Earth. So it was very interesting to see sort of some of the conflicts that arose from that. And then just throughout the season, some of the other things, like, you know, like you were saying with Jaxxer, not everything is, yeah, not, there's some serious gray areas there.
Right. And also that you bring up Adam Strange.
Mm-hmm.
There was the one episode where he's like doubting himself and he's calling himself like a C-list hero And he was
doing drops the Justice League in that episode, I believe.
And he's like, I'm doing this to impress the Justice League and, or the Green Lantern Corps or whatever. And I thought the way he was acting in that one particular episode, I'm like, wait a minute. I couldn't explain it in my head, but I thought to myself, he's sounding a lot more like Booster Gold than he is Adam Strange. So in my head, I convinced myself they're going to pull a bait and switch and sit, and eventually reveal that he's actually Booster Gold. Didn't happen, but in the way he was acting in that one episode, where it was this self-deprecating doubt that it was like the whole, right?
Were you the one who told me that that was your theory, or did I hear that theory from somebody else too? Because I don't know, I remember hearing that.
But I thought of it, but it didn't turn out. But it was interesting. But I'm like, man, Sean Cyples would have made a really good Booster goal.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're going to do it. Like once we saw Alana and Sardath,
that's the other thing I was going to mention.
We didn't see them, but we heard them. Hopefully, we will see them next season because that would be awesome.
And those, you know, those deep cuts of actually mentioning them by name.
Yeah.
That's Krypton. That's them doing it for us nerds. Because, you know, the general audience said, well, okay, but that'll hurt. But those kind of references were for us. And I really love those deep cuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. I was like, as soon as we started hearing that, I was like, is that Sardath and Alana? And I was like, oh, my goodness, that's really cool. And that leads into... I think that, you know, in the comics there was the Rand-Thanagar War. Maybe that leads into how we get Hawk Girl on the show.
I just can't wait. The idea that we could get Hawk Man or Girl, I think, given how visual effects have improved even from the last time we saw them on Legends, what I saw from the visuals on Krypton, I cannot wait.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be awesome.
And I'm just going to call it right now. Did I mention this earlier today? But they could totally spin off
the Kryptonian Hawkman thing from Robert Venditti's.
It off after you introduce him. Have Sci-Fi develop another show called Thanagar.
Dude.
Come on, you know you want that. Now that I said that, you know you want that.
Of course I do. To quote the Riddler in Batman Forever, not exactly, but sort of geekgasm.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's what I thought when I was reading Hawkman number one. I'm like, you know what? They could put him in, spin him off. Thanagar. I was writing point form notes as if somebody from DC was going to read them. Nobody did, unless they hacked my computer that I'm unaware of. That's what I thought. But one of the other things that kind of sort of it didn't detract from the show. It just kind of irritated me a little bit. Was what is her name? Lita Zod. Because remember in the pilot that we discussed, and for the first half of the season, really, or more than half, she was nothing like her mother. Suddenly, her and her mother sort of do a role reversal.
Yeah, and I thought it was brilliant. So I'm curious to hear what you
did. It just seemed like it came too. It was done too quickly.
I guess I can see that, but for me it was just like, I loved that because it was this crazy thing where at the beginning of the season you thought her mother was the bad one.
Yeah,
but
I mean, then it's character growth, sure. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying again it's because I think it's part of the lower episode count, possibly.
There's another thing in support of me, how I'm always saying, no, I like the long season. I want to see.
But I'm just saying, it felt a little like too fast for my liking. I mean, I didn't, like I said, it's nothing that detracts from the season for me. It just seemed a little too fast.
To me, it didn't feel too fast. I just thought it was so cool to see that switch where at the beginning of the season, like what it winds out is Lita winds up being even worse than her mother, and it's just like it was just this crazy flip flop that I just thought was so brilliant. I loved it.
I don't know if we discussed this, you know, privately, or if it was just in my reviews that I was thinking aloud as I was typing on Revenge of the Fans, where I reviewed all 10 episodes. Shameless plug, but. When the voice of Rao sort of reveals himself to be quote unquote, not really, but quote unquote Brainiac. Basically, he was a sentry of Brainiac's.
Yeah.
And I had thought that he had somehow transformed into Brainiac. That wasn't the case. At least I don't think that was the case.
Well, it was that Brainiac like inhabited the body of who that guy was. That was the voice of the house. Yeah.
But and his ultimate goal was to sort of make way for actual Brainiac to come down, which we saw, by the finale. But so it kind of makes the voice of Ra the equivalent of Brainiac on Smallville, because wasn't his role initially to make way for Zod. It's like a role reversal because Brainiac was to make way for Zod in Smallville, but in this one the voice of Ra was making way for Brainiac. So it's kind of similar.
That's a great point, actually. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah. Another Smallville connection there.
Yeah, and the fact that I thought of it is pretty sad. So I thought, I immediately started to think of Smallville when I saw that, how that played out. But when Brainiac sort of inhabited, if you will, the voice of Ra, and then hooked himself up to the other Sagittarii soldiers, that was some creepy stuff.
Scary, dude.
It wasn't like grotesque in terms of like horror movie levels, but it did have that horror film quality to it. Would you not agree? Especially the scene where I think it was Dev M got away temporarily, and then the Brainiac or the voice of Ra's tentacle sort of chases him down the hallway, and then grabs him and then drags him up, and you know the blood trailing along the hallway.
Yeah,
that was really creepy. And even creepier was, and I think Krypton did a really good job of this, was show our main heroes, Segel, Lyta, Jaina, however you pronounce it. What? I don't know why you're laughing, but all right. Whatever her name, how do you pronounce it? I don't know.
It's Jaina.
Oh, I don't know. Jaina, wasn't her name something else to start the season?
Yes, she was originally going to be called Allura.
I don't know, whatever the hell her name is.
Which, I guess maybe they switched it to avoid confusion, because like Supergirl's mother is named Allura.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe they didn't want
confusion. Yeah, and then later when Nyssa joins the gang, the show did a great job of showing our heroes in peril. And you never really knew, like there was never a moment where you felt, oh, okay, things are going to end nice and cleanly for them. You know, nothing was ever felt like it was going to get wrapped up in a nice little bowl by the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I appreciated the fact that the show was able to highlight that suspensefulness and always give the audience a sense of consequence and danger for our heroes. And even showing Kandor in disarray, in chaos, when Brainiac does finally crack the sort of protective dome and invades, right?
Yeah.
That looked like something out of a disaster movie, like The Day After Tomorrow and stuff like that. You know, those kind of movies. But just like I said, the level of consequence and potential danger for all our main cast was very real and very keyed in on. More so than other shows, I think we want, because you can on a lot of these, the other DC shows, you can sort of telegraph for the most part, who's going to live, who's going to die, and that kind of stuff, right? The only time you question, really, is if a trade announces that one of the actors is leaving. Then you're like, okay, he's dead. But otherwise, you could pretty telegraph who's safe, who's not. With this, you never could, right? Because at that point, we didn't know that it was getting picked up, but it has been, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But especially that unknown that is it going to get picked up or not, also led to that kind of, well, who's going to die, who's going to live, what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
One of the most disturbing things that I saw on the series, and along with the political sort of machinations and backstabbing, when I don't remember her name, but
Ona with the bomb.
Yeah, when she's sort of brainwashed by the Sentry of Brainiac, and then used as sort of like a suicide bomber.
Yes. Oh man, that was rough.
I've seen worse on Game of Thrones because it's Game of Thrones. But that's Game of Thrones level shit. Just not as.
I mean, yeah, that was dark.
Obviously violent. Yeah.
And like, you know, she had developed such a connection with him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to see that happen, and it was just like, oh man, that was devastating. And that was scary. And that was like the NTs on one of the episodes. That was just like, oh boy.
And I'm the kind of person that, you know, because I love kids so much, whenever a show has a kid in either danger or even worse, kills a kid, it instantly makes me hate whoever, whoever the villain is that caused that.
Uh-huh.
So I detested not only the voice of Rao, but by proxy, Brainiac.
Oh, from
that moment on.
Speaking of, how did your babysitting go? Did it go better than Raven in the Teen Titans episode?
It definitely went well. My niece and nephews are good, so you can.
That is good.
They're easily entertained, I always love spending time with them, so it was an enjoyable experience. Thank you for asking.
You need to give Raven some advice.
Well, I do, but first of all, my first piece of advice is get on the other Teen Titans show and offer that Teen Titans Go. That's advice, but that's not this podcast. So, I'll do
that. Well, she is on that Teen Titans show. That's where that episode Hide and Seek is from. It's from the original.
Yeah, but my get back to that show and off of this of Teen Titans Go is my ultimate advice. But
Teen Titans Go is fun, dude.
It's terrible. But anyway.
Fun show.
I instantly had a hate on for the voice of Ron and Brainiac.
Did you just say a hate on?
Yeah, hate on.
Is not that the other? Did you just coin that, or is that a thing?
No, I think that's a thing.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not gonna take credit for that.
I think I might use that. That's actually pretty good.
Go ahead. No, I'm not gonna sue you. I didn't come up with it.
I've never heard that before.
go nuts. But that was just like again the peril and the horror element was there. Which is good because I think this show was very, very, you know, it's sort of skirting the line between genres at moments, right? Well, you know, it's a political drama one minute, it's a hard sci-fi show the next minute, with elements of horror the next minute. So,
and it sort of fits into the superhero genre, but not exactly. So,
which is
interesting.
So it sort of walks between all genres, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that aspect of it. Before we talk about the big, big reveal, I want to get your thoughts on, does it seem to you like, because at the beginning of the season, they were really pushing and getting you to believe that Seg and Lyta were going to end up together.
Uh-huh.
Did it seem like they were by the last three or four episodes of the season that the writers were pushing and the characters of Nyssa and Seg were growing closer and that relationship was going to come to the forefront more?
Oh yeah, I'm pretty convinced now that Nyssa is Cal's grandmother. I think it's about, I think Sig and Lyta getting back together is about as likely as Jim and Barbara getting back together on Gotham at this point.
But yeah, I because my theory is that by the end of the series, right, mm-hmm. the L family is going to get their status back,
mm-hmm.
and then instead of Corvex, Sega is going to be like, no, I'm renaming this kid Jor-El.
Like, I really like that name, by the way, Corvex. Yeah, that's a cool name.
Jor-El, yeah, but come on, it's got to be Jor-El.
Yeah, no, of course. But I'm just saying, that's a cool name.
But then one of the big revelations happened, and that is Oliver Queen's stepfather is not just your average Black Zero operative. He is, in fact, General Zod.
You thought it was Zod's father
that. Yeah, well, come on. I wasn't that far off. Could have been.
Yeah, but no, you thought of it. It's just, I'm just giving you a hard time because you thought even after the reveal, you thought the reveal was that he was Zod's father.
No, but I remember I said I didn't see the online spoiler, so I didn't know when we talked about it.
But it was like, it was
like
it
you.
Was,
I stay off the internet when I watch these shows.
No, it was implied in that episode, though. It was implied in the episode, like the way it was revealed. It was like they didn't say it outright, but they implied it.
Oh no! After he said, you talk about when he said where he got the necklace from.
Yeah.
No, at that point, I knew that it was his mother, or I knew that he was. Yeah. Once he said, "I got it from you."
No, because you told me after that episode that you...
Did he call... Hold on a second. Did he call her mother at that point?
No, I don't think he called her mother at that
point. Okay, so then... No. So then, I was still well within the realm of believing, you know, being justified in my belief because I had not been online, so I hadn't seen...
Well, they said they confirmed it in the promo, too, for the next episode.
But I hadn't seen the promo because they don't air the promo here. So I hadn't gone online. I'm not watching it on Sci-Fi. I'm watching it on the Canadian equivalent. They don't show promos.
Mm,
the next episode. So I legitimately hadn't seen that promo. And so
but then there's the thing, because then you were trying to tell me that it was like, oh, because the timeline would match up for him to be Zod's father, but it's actually that it was because Zod's older than Cal traditionally. So it actually makes sense.
Yeah, I was kind of getting my...
I'm not at
Ancestry.com, damn it. This is a... Look, I was just going based on the limited information I had at the time, and that's the story I concocted in my head. Ken, clearly it was wrong, but I will say though, what a reveal! I did not like the way it was revealed was awesome.
And I've always loved Colin Salmon in like pretty much everything I've seen him in. Like I loved him on Arrow. I've loved him in other things I've seen him in, but I did not know he had this in him. He was amazing as Zod.
Oh, yeah. Like, he inhabits everything you think of when you think of Zod.
Yeah, yeah. And the scariest part is, at the end of the season, when he gets everything that basically Zod's ever wanted, he, like, gets it. Like, that he gets his wish at the end of the season, pretty much.
Yeah, and the
cool thing... To rule Krypton.
Yeah, but the cool thing about, like, it's not just a reveal. First of all, I want to say that, again, there's another instance where I gotta, you know, applaud both the creative team behind the scenes and also fandom, because here we have a situation where Zod is now being played by a person of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's never been done before. Yet... The writers and producers did not alter Zod in any way to sort of have life experiences or scenarios that you typically think of that are associated with people of color, right? So they didn't change the character. The character was just the character, right? But also, I gotta applaud the fandom. Because usually when there's a race change, right, or a gender change, not so much with gender changes because those rarely happen, but with race change, usually fandom freaks out and loses their shit, right? In a negative way. I didn't see that with this reveal at all. So I just want to applaud both the creative team for the character was the character and it wasn't changed for in lieu of the casting decision or anything like that, and also the fandom for being mature adults and rational human beings. It's a nice change. Keep it up. But the other reveal was because, you know, to stop Brainiac, Zod's bright idea is, all right, we're going to release Doomsday because why not, right? That's
yeah, why not have two extremely intimidating Superman villains running around instead of just one?
We'll worry about the consequences later of him destroying everything. It's all right. So
It's not like he could kill Superman, let alone all these non-powered Kryptonians.
Yeah, who are just going to be lanced to the slaughter. And there will be nobody left for Zod to rule.
I can't hear the term lambs to the slaughter without hearing Lex and Lionel's conversation from the Smallville episode Memoria.
Yeah.
He says that.
Which we said was a great episode.
Yes.
on our last Smallville review.
But, he would be the lamb to the slaughter. I can't stop thinking about that.
But when Zod and Lyta arrive at the chamber that's holding Doomsday, it's revealed that you need, because the door has a glyph that is a hybrid of the House of El and the House of Zod symbol, right? Mm-hmm. So the implication from a previous episode was that you needed blood from an El family member and a Zod family member. So to open the door, Segel had to run through the family tree there. Segel and Zod, right, you know, both slit their hands and had blood pour out in the thing. The door opened, and I think at that point they had decided better against releasing Doomsday. But when things got more dire, it's just Zod and Lyta at first at the chamber.
Uh-huh.
And he cuts his hand open. The blood drips down. The glyph morphs again, and the door opens. And the implication, and then the reveal, is that Zod is both obviously Zod and an El.
Yeah.
And then he reveals that he's discovered that Segel is his father, which would make Jor-El his brother, and Kal-El by extension his nephew. Take that, Ancestry.com. And shove that where the sun don't shine.
You got it right this time, Adam.
You don't need to pay me $65. You should, but, you know, whatever the fee is, $69, whatever it is.
My jaw dropped at that reveal, dude.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, holy crap. And you know what? It's awesome. And everybody was talking about, like, oh, my God. This has never been done in the history of Superman. Now, look, as awesome as the moment was, those people that are saying it has never been done are wrong. It has been done. It was done in Superman Earth 3. Or Earth 3. Again, I did it. Earth 1. Sorry. Superman Earth 1. I think it was Volume 3. Where it was revealed that Zod was Superman's uncle. So it has been done. But it was what a great reveal, nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so cool.
Have you read Superman Earth 1 Volume 3, by the way?
No, I have not. I've read most of the Earth 1 comics, actually. I've read both the Batman ones, I've read both the Teen Titans ones now, and I've read the Wonder Woman one, but I have not gotten to the Superman ones yet.
They're good.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
All three of them are excellent.
I love almost all of the Earth 1 stuff so far that I've read, so like I'm not surprised to hear that at all. I should pick those out.
But that reveal was amazing. I just like I said at the end of that episode, I'm like, holy shit, Like, I was not... That did not once cross my mind that that was a possibility, that that was ever going to be... I mean, that they were going to go that road. Never once. And they didn't. And so now we get... So, like I said, Kandor is in chaos. You know, Brainiac has broken the protective dome.
It's like, actually, you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of when Batman breaks the protective dome in Justice League, when he flies the flying fox through Steppenwolf's dome.
Yeah, it was a, there was a little similarity there, except for there wasn't as much red.
Although, actually, now that I think about it, the color palette of Krypton actually reminds me a lot of that final battle in Justice League.
Yeah, but the red was darker. For whatever reason, the red was darker in the trailers than it was in the actual movie, but whatever. One of the cool things was when you see Brainiac start to capture the city of Kandor, and he's about to bottle it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the tentacles dig into the ground. And the way it looks like he's literally... And so the glass dome starts forming, but it literally looks like he's going to... And he is, if he would have gotten his way. He was going to literally rip Kandor out of the ground. And, yeah, we've seen that in comics before. But in live action, visually, it looks more horrifying than even ever before. Right? Like, and then... The explanation when Val-El I think it was because then what Seg and Zod ultimately decide is that, you know, Zod has this revelation that I'm gonna go get Val-El, who's still alive and in the Phantom Zone, and then he's gonna help us figure this out. So he goes and gets Val-El. He brings him out. They have a, you know. Him and Seg have this emotional family moment. The Superman theme plays again in an epic fashion, like usual, on this show. And so then Val-El is describing what happens once Brainiac captures a city. And the thought of, like, people being, like, paralyzed, like, they're cognitive of what's going on, but they're helpless because they're paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
That was horrifying. And when you see it, like when they actually key in on Adam Strange, who during, you know, I'll double back for a second, during the Ona bomb moment.
He got transported,
He transported with his Zeta beams to Earth. But the one of the key pieces of that information was that it was a bottled city of Earth in Brainiac's possession. So what you see is, like, these people that are like frozen, but, you know, like they're paralyzed, but as Val explains, they have, you know, brain function. They know they're being studied and analyzed and tested on and stuff. That was horrifying,
because that's not usually how it works. Like, usually they're bottled up and they can still, like, they're still walking around in there and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so that was even more.
Yeah, and they're kind of living like a sort of normal life, just, you know, like every day is kind of Groundhog Day sort of thing.
Which, honestly, like, that's not the greatest thing ever, but it's not
near. But it's better than being paralyzed, but knowing that you're paralyzed.
And just
So that was horrifying, I thought.
It reminded me of the Smallville episode Forever, with the kid who. Basically,
Tries to recapture
high school by freezing everybody, and, like, if people don't do what he says, he, like, freezes them, but, like, their eyes are still moving, and they're, like, it reminded me of that.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was horrifying, I thought. But I even liked the fact that when they, you know, they reveal that Val-El is still alive, right?
Uh-huh.
And the explanation is that when he was basically told to walk the plank and fall to his death, he had a device that would, that it, you know, once he clicked it, would transport him into the Phantom Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And he did at the very last minute. And they go back, they double back and they sort of take you back to the premiere and show you that, which is cool. It's like the show coming full circle with the beginning of the season.
Although, if I have one criticism of this season, really, it's that I wish, I wasn't real keen on them. You know, it's a fake out death, and you know how I feel about those. So
right,
I wasn't
yeah.
real keen on them. You know, it was a big moment in the pilot when he died, or we thought he died, and then it revealed, you know, that he was still alive. So I wasn't
But the explanation that he was in the Phantom Zone and sort of how this iteration of the Phantom Zone works, right? Where, you know, they talk about it being, it's sort of a drift from time and space, which explains how Zod and Val could be there simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then also, he talks about how Val could see into the past, present, and future, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, you know, try and find ways to, well, study Brainiac, but then also try and decipher ways that he could stop him. And you know, Val says, well, there was no conceivable way, there's no conceivable way to stop this guy. So then, Seg and Zod, you know, come to this plan where they're going to, Zod goes to Brainiac and says, I'll give you Vala, and he has access to the Phantom Zone, which can, you know, show you plans of attack to sort of take over different civilizations and different worlds, right? But it's all a ruse to basically get Brainiac back to the fortress and trap him in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
It works.
But at a cost.
Right. And so it starts to work. And the cool thing was, you saw the Superman cape fully form again, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, as, you know, sort of Seg, Val, and Zod are sort of celebrating their victory, Brainiac reaches like out from the Phantom Zone and grabs Seg. And sort of pulls him up. And then Zod, being an evil SOB, decides, well, now's my opportunity. And to prevent Brainiac from getting out, I'm going to destroy the Phantom Zone projector. Presumably leaving Seg no way out.
Yeah.
Well, what happens then? The cape changes to a black, silver, and red, you know, a black cape with a silver and red Zod glyph on it, right?
Yep.
We then see, you know, it pans in on the cape, and the way the shot worked, I don't know if you remember it, it zooms in on the symbol. So I thought, oh, like before they pulled back, I'm like, oh my God, they took us to Earth and are going to show us evil Superman. They're going to give us a glimpse of evil Superman. All it was Zod, basically, in the council chambers, basically telling everybody, you know, he's basically drafted all the rankless into the Kryptonian military.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how they're going to go and explore space and sort of colonize everybody to be part of Krypton. And if they don't, you know, if they don't comply, then then he did the whole...
Maybe that's where we go to Thanagar. Maybe they go to Thanagar and try to do that there.
You're really sold on this idea now that I mentioned it, aren't you?
I really am. Yes, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. But so when he mentions...
especially since Legends of Tomorrow went with the Egyptian route, I think it would be cool if they, you know, to see, you know, in live action, see the Thanagarian route, definitely.
Yeah. So, but then when he's talking about colonizing, he says, and if they don't agree, they will kneel before us, and he does the line.
Yeah.
He did it with such intensity and loudness and boisterousness. It was just, I was like, oh, damn, they did it, and they did it well.
Our buddy, all season, ever since the Zod reveal, our buddy Zach from Always Hold On to Smallville kept tweeting the hashtag kneel before Walter, which I thought was hilarious.
But no, when he did it, I'm like, damn, he did it, and he did it well. And it was one thing, and it's like, I'm like, okay, this is like a hybrid of, like, when he did the Near Before Zodline, it was a hybrid of Michael Shannon and Terrence Stamp.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
And the thing that I kind of made me regret was like, damn, we never got to hear Michael Shannon say Kneel Before Zod.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool, actually.
That's not the last scene. There were two more scenes that we saw in the finale that were, mm-hmm. were equally as epic. We go back to the Earth City that's enslaved by Brainiac, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's where we see Adam Strange looking at all these paralyzed, you know, Earthlings. And then the shot pans around, and we see a statue of General Zod. So my thought process was, oh, two things. That's like, that would be the equivalent of the Superman statue. Remember how when he died, they built him a statue in the comics?
Mm-hmm.
That's that, but for Zod, and because he's enslaved the planet. But that scene is also sort of like a play on the Planet of the Apes franchise. Remember when Charlton Heston finds the Statue of Liberty buried on the beach?
I've only seen the new series.
Which one? The current three?
The current three, yeah.
Oh, so you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, unfortunately. I mean, I do, because I've heard
of it. But you've heard of the scene, right?
I've heard of that scene, so I've never seen it.
But that scene reminds me a lot of, or was a nice callback to that, I think. So that was really cool. But then the big reveal. Somewhere underneath Krypton.
Yes.
In a steel chamber, all you hear is, you know, toom, toom. Yeah. And then you see one punch, two punch, the third punch breaks the glass, Doomsday's hand, and then you see his face. And he roars. And the season ends.
Yep. And he looks awesome.
First of all, the fact that they were able to take that moment from the comics, mm-hmm. and transplant it in a show that doesn't have Superman and do it so well and have it fit seamlessly amazes me.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, how the hell did they do that on a TV show budget?
That's one thing. Krypton looks, everything about it looks amazing. Brainiac looks amazing. Doomsday looks amazing. The city of Kandor looks amazing. Like, the skimmers that they drive around in look amazing. Like, everything about this show, like, the production value is just off the charts, dude.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, I am surprised, but on the other hand, I'm not, after all the amazing stuff.
But Doomsday blew me away. I'm like, how does he look that damn good? I know you may fight me on this, but it's my favorite looking live action Doomsday, look wise.
Smallville still takes the cake for me.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. But for me, it's like, wow. The other thing that I want to ask you, so whose cape do you think that is now? In the fortress.
Well, I think it's General Zod's.
Is it Zod's, or is one of Zod's descendants? Did he go theoretically to Earth?
That could be too.
And become the quote unquote Superman, but the evil.
That could be too, but I guess I guess the first thing that would come to my mind, though, most likely would be that maybe Krypton still... Here's a thing that I think could happen. Maybe Krypton still does, you know, get destroyed. Zod leaves and tries to colonized it on Earth anyway. So Zod would be Superman's not there to stop him.
Yeah, but so Zod would be the evil Superman kind of character.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's the way. I mean, your theory could be right too. I'm just saying that's the first. That's what I would think would be most likely.
Okay.
Is what I was saying. But okay. I don't know. I guess we'll probably find out next season.
Oh,
huh?
But thank God it got renewed, because can you imagine
if it had ended on that?
I would have got arrested for choking somebody out, because I was already pissed. I was already pissed off about Lucifer, and they done that to me within successions of a couple of weeks. I would have snapped.
hey, well, you wound up getting both of them back. So
yeah, I'm pretty fortunate in that respect.
And you didn't have to choke out anybody.
Exactly. I can still live as a free man. It's good.
Would it be worth it to have to watch the shows from a jail cell?
Well, is the communal TV high def? Because if it is, oh God, but I don't know. Oh, goodness. Yeah, it just phenomenal. Is there anything that I didn't bring up that we talked about that you want to touch on?
A couple things, I guess. Just first of all, those parasites that reminded me of the parasites from the episode Rush from Smallville that General Zod used are one thing that stood out to me as something else that you were talking about, something that was really nasty earlier this season.
Yeah.
Or this season, that was another thing I would point out that was really nasty.
Yeah.
I would also point out Pinar Toprak's score was just outstanding. Yeah. It was just, and the way she incorporated, of course, the John Williams Superman theme. We've talked about this. Yeah. Maybe it was just off mic. No, we talked about it.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. I was so blown away by that. I also want to call out Andrea Vassiliou, played Cole Da, who was that member of the Sagittarii who killed that guy that they thought was a big She, do you know where she's, do you know what DC her past DC work is?
I'm gonna say Smallville just because it's you.
No, not Smallville, but it's gonna be another thing that you're gonna be like, oh, of course he's gonna say it, bring that up.
The Batman.
No, although another good guess.
Birds of Prey. I'm really gonna
She was in The Dark Knight Rises. She was, you know that shot when Alfred talks about wanting to see Bruce, you know, in the cafe, and they
do that shot
at the beginning, not when it's Bruce and Selina at the end, but at the beginning. She's the one standing in for Selina in that first scene with Bruce.
Oh, okay.
She's in that, and then she's also, I think she's a stunt woman she was in both Wonder Woman and Justice League, I think, as a stunt woman.
Cool.
Or she played an Amazon, actually. She played an Amazon in Wonder Woman. So did Anna Gbamo, who played Jaina. Some other DC connections there. Of course, I got to point out Chaun Sipos again. I don't think I talked about mentioned the fact that he's a Smallville alum.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
I mentioned it when we reviewed the pilot. I don't think I mentioned it this episode.
Oh, yeah, no.
So, thought I'd throw that in there.
But
yeah,
man, was it... anything else, or we'll go ahead and rate this puppy?
Oh, and I guess one more Smallville connection is Doris Egan, who was a writer. She wrote Hug and Hourglass in season one of Smallville.
Cool.
She was a writer. She was a producer, and she wrote, I think, one episode of season one of Krypton.
By the way, you mentioned the score.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to point out that, you know, everybody's all... you know, huffing and puffing and salivating over the fact that what's her name?
Pinar Toprak?
Yeah, I'm never going to be able to pronounce that. That she has the job for Captain Marvel, the Marvel movie. She has the scoring job.
People are huffing and puffing?
No, they're all excited about it because, look at Marvel. They hired a female composer. And I'm like, yeah, that's good and all, but Krypton did it first. I just want to point that out. So, all of you people with Marvel rose-colored glasses thinking that Marvel is everything first, I hate to break it to you, but
Krypton. And she did some additional music for Justice League as well.
I don't know who we have to talk to, but I want a score or soundtrack of Krypton.
Oh yeah, me too. Me too.
Somebody get on that.
It'd be Water Tower Music. They do a lot of those DC soundtrack releases.
Well, you can tweet them. Maybe I'll tweet them.
In a few days, hopefully. Just a few more days, hopefully.
All right, then get on that. Your first job back on Twitter will be to tweet Water Tower Records.
My first job is to get ready for Batcat Week, which is coming up soon.
Okay, I'll be muting you for a couple of weeks.
Oh my goodness, Adam!
Oh, we've been having some anti-Batcat fun in your absence on Twitter.
No, why are you doing that?
Well, we got to take advantage of the fact that you're not around.
Oh my goodness!
But
who's we? Who do I have to go yell at?
Well, I've been doing it, and people have been enjoying my taking advantage of the fact that you're not there. So,
oh goodness, don't get used to it.
People are enjoying the anecdotes.
Don't get used to it.
But all right, I guess we can go ahead and rate this thing.
All righty, sounds good to me.
All right, so what is your grade for season one of Krypton?
I think I'm going to give season one of Krypton an A-. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Awesome. I am going to do one better. No, maybe actually, I guess that's two better. And go ahead and give this A+.
Wow.
Because I absolutely loved it. And I won't say where it lands on my DC TV or my superhero or my comic book TV list for this season, because that would ruin that part of the episode. So I'm not going to say where it lands. You'll have to wait till we do our superhero episode to find out. But this season's great. I can't wait for season two. And if you still haven't watched Krypton, do so, because it's top notch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but that brings
and get episode. Caught up before season two, so that you can give it your ratings for season two and watch it live. So then, hopefully, it gets to season three also.
Right. Well, this is true. Yeah.
Yep.
But that brings this episode to a close. We are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. We talked about Batman at the beginning a bit, but if you want more Batman,
and who doesn't?
Honestly, exactly.
Truly, if you don't, really, then I don't know what to tell you.
Then something is wrong with you. But if you want more Batman, then go ahead and hop over there, and you'll find a whole list of awesome podcasts with Batman content to please you for hours and hours and hours.
Indeed.
And in terms of social media plugs. We're going to forego Jordan's Twitter plug for now because you won't find him yet.
Hey, well, no, that's what I'm saying. By the time this episode comes out, I might be on there again.
All right, so go ahead. Give us your social media plugs then.
All righty. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. Instagram I'm definitely on right now. That you can't find me, but Twitter, yeah. Hopefully, at BatFanJordanV. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, we'd love to hear from you in the form of an iTunes review, and it would help us out. Thank you.
And if you want to find me on social media and enjoy the last few Jordan-free days on there, you can do that at Superhero Sci-Fi. I almost forgot my own
handle. That's your karma for doing all your awful Batcat negativity.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Well, I don't know what it is because I'm not seeing it, and I'm
exactly.
I feel fortunate that I'm not seeing it.
I didn't tag you in anything anyway, so I kept true to our pact, in case you were wondering. So if you want to chat with me, you find me on there, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, have a wonderful weekend and a great week. So long, everybody.
Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.